Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, it's another big day here at Action Radio, and as always, I'm a little nervous whenever I have a big guest. And so any last-minute thing like I just had to deal with right before the show makes me even more nervous. So you never know exactly what's going to happen or how it's going to work, but as far as I know, we're going to have Christina Bob calling in at 9 o'clock Central, 10 o'clock Eastern, and that would be in 2 hours from now, assuming all goes well. But like I said, there's always little last-minute technical things, so who knows? You know, you start dealing with these folks that talk to the whole world, and you know, a senior advisor and an attorney in the Trump campaign, which I'm trying to get connected with. Like I say, we never know for sure. But well, whatever time I get, you know, I'm going to ask as many questions as time allows, and we'll see what happens. But ultimately, my goal is to get us connected to the campaign so that we can have the first campaign in history where citizen legislation becomes, you know, a decent part of that campaign. But that remains to be seen. We're still after it. All right, Bill's on the line, so let's talk to him and get to the Fecky Report.
Long Night Action Radio presents the Fecky Report.
Good morning, Action Radio. Greg Pendunkadunk Liss, how's it going?
Well, give me a new name every week. Is this the deal now?
Yeah, it's actually becoming very challenging.
Yeah, I guess so. And I thought Penglis was hard enough. You know, I used to keep when I worked briefly with the Massachusetts government after college. They gave me all kinds of stuff was sent to me, and I kept a list of all the misspellings of my name. So I had a regular, you know, five subject notebook, you know, page stuck on the wall, and there was three columns of misspellings of my name, which is like 60 plus combinations. It was pretty interesting. But anyway, feel free. Pengalopoulos or whatever you just called me. Okay, great. Wonderful. How are you?
What? I can't even pronounce it again. Oh, well.
Well,
everything's going pretty well. As most people probably know at this point, but for the new people, you know, I do own a pediatric clinic. So the past couple of weeks has been pretty hectic because all the kids are going back to school.
Right.
And all the parents have decided to wait to the very, very last second to make sure that their kids are up to date on their physicals and shots, including one person at 5:05 last night who was begging to come in immediately because they needed to register their kids for school. And school started today.
Good timing. Yeah. Well, you know, I guess they're multitasking. They just, you know, that's kind of crazy. So what are the current requirements? Are they still requiring a certain level of vaccines and things like that? Or can kids just, you know, go naturally healthy to school?
Well, there are religious exemptions that the school does allow. Obviously, there are certain requirements that are more or less mandatory unless you have that exemption. But that exemption is basically telling somebody I'm religiously exempt, and
right,
they go ahead and check mark the box and you're done.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's the way it should be. How about a health exemption? Like you're too healthy to bother with those things. I mean, that'd be my exemption. I'm sorry. I'm too healthy. I don't want to take those. Okay, fine.
Well, you know, it's always a personal preference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, depending on what study, you know, and studies are what you want to make of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have studies that say vaccines are bad. Others studies will say vaccines are good. I'm somewhere kind of in the middle. You know, at our clinic, we don't do any vaccines that don't have at least a 10-year history.
That makes sense.
Because we want to make sure that we do see mm-hmm. any side effects and stuff like that. And, you know, and just like the polio vaccine, which was out for 10 years before they realized that it was causing cancer, and they made the proper adjustments for that.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of problems.
So I can't wait So we're in year three right. So we're in year two right now of the COVID vaccine. So probably another 3 years we'll start seeing studies pop up on the side the true
how dangerous it is
for the COVID vaccine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I made a post last night on Facebook that, I mean, as you know, I had open heart surgery back in 2016, right before the election. It was kind of funny. It was October 24th. And one of the biggest reasons for that, you know, my decision was not to get myocarditis and die prematurely. And so the idea of taking a COVID shot, as I put in the post, you can guess where I told them they could put their jab. I was not going to have any part of it. Just, you know, in fact, I should have been medically exempt even if there was a mandate. I mean, fortunately, there wasn't, so I didn't have to worry about it. But even if there was, I wouldn't have done it. You know, it just
made
no sense.
Well, exactly. And, you know, and I always made it a point, you know, in our clinic, we never made it mandatory. We would not mm-hmm. tell them yes or no because we didn't have enough data to tell them a yes or no. And I've said it since the very beginning that it's, what was the word I used? Medically negligent, I think is the terminology I used back when this first came out, for any doctor, for anyone to push this as a cure-all. There was no data that suggested that this was going to work. There was no data that stated that this was safe. And for anyone to come out and say, yes, you have to get this vaccine because it's going to protect you and protect others.
How does it protect others? that all causes laughable. There were two laughable things that were so absurd. It was ridiculous. But yet people believed in one was that you take a vaccine to protect other people. Hence the folks that would walk around, you know, downtown Pensacola wearing a seatbelt saying, I'm doing this for you. You know, I mean, everybody ever saw that. It was kind of a joke, but the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
And the other one was asymptomatic transfer, which doesn't exist. You know, if you don't have symptoms, if you're not coughing, you know, and spreading germs and bacteria and viruses, you're not spreading anything, you know. And so that myth was blown out of the water, too. So it's really quite fascinating. But here's a question for you, though. And the same question I asked Judy Mikovits when she was on. She's one of probably the world's greatest molecular biologists. I mean, she made vaccines. She knows what she's talking about. The diseases that you're giving vaccines for, how many of them are actually fatal? I know polio is serious, but polio was reduced mostly by chlorine in the swimming pools, better sewers, better nutrition, the things that reduce almost all of our diseases. So how dangerous are the diseases, and are there any that cannot be treated? Do we vaccinate for anything that can't be treated?
Okay, so I guess it all depends on who the person is. You know, and that's the whole problem with this fight. You know, the fight is that, you know, someone will say, oh, the chickenpox vaccine caused my kid to have autism. Proven false. Autism is really done – is pretty much detected almost before the first shot is given, as far as the MMR, which is the measles, mumps, rubella.
I got that one when I was a kid.
But there might be something in your DNA that shot triggers. And everyone's DNA is different. Everyone's makeup is different. You know, I'm allergic to bananas. If I eat bananas, my esophagus closes.
Huh.
But it doesn't happen to you. Shellfish is another one. Peanuts, which, you know, we could go on a whole story about peanuts because I still think that's something else that's triggering if all of a sudden everyone's allergic to peanut garbage.
Right.
There's something else definitely going on with that. But what we're looking at here, I mean, and if you want to say vaccines are changing your DNA, well, you know, I'm not a scientist, but I would have to say, yes, it is changing it because it is working to prevent something. But going back to your original question, have people died of measles? Yes. Bilirubin, which is very common at a very young age. You could die from that or have serious long-term effects from that. If you're talking about pertussis, yes, people have died. I mean, all these vaccines, someone has died from that disease. Whether it be someone's died from chickenpox, someone's died from the flu.
Oh, I had chickenpox at 42 years old. I don't recommend that, but because I never had it as a kid. But I picked up.
Well, I had
my daughter,
it twice.
You know.
I had it in kindergarten, and I had it sophomore year of high school. And the older you get, the worse it is.
No kidding. Well, so the next question is: of these diseases that they're vaccinating for, are there any that are untreatable? if you get pertussis, you know, is there a pretty quick treatment or a cure for that? And so in other words, do we need to vaccinate for every possible disease, or considering how rare these are these days, can we just, would it be, can people make a choice to say, okay, fine, I'm not going to vaccinate, but if the disease is there, yeah, I'll be right in for treatment, you know, at the earliest stages, you know, so is that a viable treatment plan?
All right. So the argument with that is that, okay, so we brought up polio already. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously science will say that because of the vaccine, polio is almost non-existent. Combined with environmental changes also. We're seeing less and less chickenpox in kids in comparison to years and years ago. But what we are starting to see is more meningitis. We're starting to see, there's a vaccine for meningitis that a lot of the older kids wave. You know, the parents wave it, saying that it's not necessary to get into high school, so therefore my kid's not going to get it, which is fine. You know, we don't care about that. Tetanus is something that obviously, you know, you get stabbed by a rusty nail, you're going to get a shot anyway, so you might as well get it ahead of time. Hepatitis A is something that if you ever been to a foreign country, you definitely want to make sure that you have, you're fully boosted for the hepatitis A, because that stuff was pretty nasty.
I've been to a lot of
countries. I'm just going down the list.
I went to a bunch of foreign countries over 3 months. I mean, I went to like 20. So yeah.
Yeah, and if you're not up to date with your Hep A booster, you know, drinking that water could become very nasty in a hurry. And of course,
I never drank the water. No, I drank the wine. I drank anything else. Fruit juice. I drank all kinds of. If it didn't come out of a bottle, I didn't. You know, I didn't even drink. Use the ice. You know, I mean, I was pretty careful about that. So yeah.
Yep. Yeah, me. That's the way I was when I was over in the Philippines. A couple of times I did use the ice, and yeah, I had repercussions because of it.
No, yeah, and you don't think of the ice, but ice is water, folks. Just because it's frozen doesn't mean it's bacteria. Like,
but
okay,
when
I'll just sleep
hot,
here a while.
You just don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, use the air conditioning, but don't breathe the air.
Yeah. So, but I mean, okay. So it depends on who the person is. Will depend on how deadly a virus is. You know, people with weak immune systems are more susceptible to dying from the common cold than someone like me or you who has who are fully immune. That's the one thing about science that really, really irritates me is the fact that they try to group people all together. And each one of us is so different. I have, I used to have blonde hair and blue eyes. Now I got grayish blonde hair and blue eyes.
Don't go gray.
You have,
well, maybe eventually,
yeah.
You know, after you've left this world. But yeah, but until then, no, I think you'd be fine.
Yeah.
But hair,
yeah,
hey, listen.
I mean, and then, you know, say my wife has brown eyes and brown hair. You know, we are not exactly the same. So how can you say this vaccine is a cure-all for all? And that's been my problem with this COVID thing from the very beginning, when they're talking about attaching to your DNA so that your DNA learns how to fight this new virus, is not all DNA reacts
but
exactly the same.
But your DNA already knows how to fight it. I mean, we're born with an immune system. So what the problem is that you're replacing natural immunity with chemical, generic, you know, one-size-fits-all immunity. And what they're finding, I learned about this, was that, you'd boost for some very particular, specific things, but you ruined your immunity for everything else. You know, this is how the variants came about. Because the variants go, oh, we'll just change our you know, genetics a little bit. And because viruses multiply so quickly, that, I mean, changing their DNA is easy. It's how they survive. But our immune system is built to handle that. You know, and so using the chemical immune system as opposed to our regular one made no sense. And the fact that they didn't test for immunity, this is where I knew this was a fraud. I knew this was a complete business fraud, because the fact that they didn't test for immunity first. Why would you give a vaccination to somebody who's already immune? Now, we all had COVID around here.
Right.
We've talked about this beginning of January 2020. We had COVID before we knew what COVID was. We were already over it.
Yep.
Okay. So as soon as it came out, and all of us are like, oh, I just had that, you know, so I don't need a, you know, a shot. I don't need a mask. I don't need any of that stuff. I'm already immune. And we were right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and exactly right. And it, what was really annoying is that some people did go out and get immunity testing and came back that said that they did have the titers to fight this. And but yet it, that wasn't acceptable. They still had to show that they got a shot. And thus, here comes the fake COVID cards and stuff like that. And, you know, which is really, really sad that, that people were so people are so stupid. I'm just going to say it. People are so stupid that just because you had a card that all of a sudden you were okay to come inside their restaurant or inside their store or just to go outside, you know, for a stupid card. And they didn't care if it was a fraud or not. They just wanted to make sure you had a card.
I mean, oh, yeah, conformity and fear.
This is one of the biggest psyops. All this was is one huge psyops.
No, the marketing
campaign. That's what it ended up being.
No, it's one of the world's greatest forced marketing campaigns to buy a product that will either injure or kill you. It best provides maybe some slight additional immunity for a very short time, like a couple of months. But the risks so far exceed any potential benefit from this. I mean, it's to be ridiculous. But the real test, of course, is product liability.
I'm going to take this one step further.
Yeah, without product liability.
I'm going to take this one step further.
You know it's not safe. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but what they have done is illegal on so many fronts. Mm-hmm. It is illegal to bully or what's called coercion. Coercion is illegal in marketing. It's illegal in business. If I walked inside Home Depot and Home Depot threw a chainsaw at me and says, you have to buy this, otherwise you're not leaving this store.
Yeah, that's a great example. I like that one. Yeah.
I mean, Home Depot would be in deep trouble. And that's exactly what the federal government did to us. They, you know, they told us we can't leave our – or state and local governments more said we cannot leave our house unless we have a card in hand or that or we got vaccinated. There's no difference between the two. Coercion is illegal in business, and that's exactly what they did to us.
Well, it's beyond coercion. It was extortion. It was mandate. It was draconian. It was absolute communist rule. Pianchi, you want to get into this?
Yeah, but what you've been saying is absolutely right. No two humans are exactly alike, unless they are evolved in an isolated position. But when human beings start traveling and migrating around, they begin to share the differences. And the history of that immune system lies in your bone marrow. And, I mean, it's very clever when your body has something that's going on and they have them singing. Well, it just basically dispatches some member of it. So go to the library and see what we got there. And it's happening at a microscopic level. And I'll tell you something else, too. Take pests like roaches. The formula that they use to kill roaches has to change all the time. And the time you sprayed for, you whisked that, took a whiff of that, it might have made you feel funny, but it altered your DNA. So when you're walking around the house and you're shedding skin, those insects eat that skin, and it alters their immune system to the roach spray. We all get along real well.
This is all new to me, but that's fascinating.
You're seeing that, but you're seeing that with now with the lawsuits that are coming about with what do you call the weed killer?
Roundup.
Roundup. You're seeing that with the Roundup. I mean, people are now all of a sudden getting cancer because of it. And Pianchi's exactly right. You know, it's alternating your DNA. It's knocking down your immune system, and it's allowing cancer. You know, he brings up a great point.
Yeah, no, it was new to me. I was just fascinated by it. But Roundup has dioxin, which is a well-known carcinogen. Same thing as Agent Orange. It's the same stuff. You know, dioxin is one of the most deadly chemicals out there. And what's wrong with weeds anyway? You know, grow different plants. Okay. Well, we got about 10 minutes left, Bill. Do you have any politics for us or any other pressing issues?
Yeah, on the lighter note, you know, a friend of mine, Joe, he tried the Dolly Parton diet, and now Joe is lean. Jolene.
Oh, Jolene. Uh-huh.
But I did get in a car accident. I did get carjacked the other day, though. Yeah, I got carjacked the other day. Yeah, so I told the cops, I go, Yeah, I guess they're Pirates of the Caribbean.
Hmm. Is this a slow news for you, Bill, or something, or what? Because we got a lot of stuff to go.
Okay, so
we got a ton of things going on.
Yeah, so on Instagram, there's a these. I think it's Bill Engel and one other guy. It looks like Bill Engel. I don't know who it is though. They sit on a dock on a river, and they pretend to drink like this frothy, either coffee or hot weather. I don't know what it is, and they tell bad dad jokes. And those are the two for this morning. And it was pretty. I found them pretty humorous, so I figure I'd share them with you.
Well, thank you for sharing. We always appreciate sharing.
But let's talk about
group hug too. So yeah, all right. Hey, listen, there was something interesting. I found on Mike Hill's website. We're trying to get Mike back on the show. Be a good time to have him back. But he had a thing from WEAR, Wear TV, of this video of this shark swimming amongst swimmers in Navarre. I think it's the Navarre Beach.
Yeah.
Pier. Have you seen that? That's pretty cool. I want to put the theme from Jaws under it, so people can look, look at the video.
I'm glad you brought that up.
Oh, okay.
Because I am glad you brought
you
up, because that was the one thing I did. Yeah, so you know you're going to have a bad day when you wake up at 5:30 in the morning and all your windows are already foggy because it's too freaking humid outside. and
you have
noticed,
your air conditioning not too strong.
And it's at 78. I mean, geez.
Okay, fine.
But. And if you ever notice, the only time you hear about climate change and global warming is during the summertime months in America. Mm-hmm. You don't hear about
it. Well, there is climate
it
change.
It
gets hot. It gets hot in the summer and cold in the winter. That's climate change.
Well, yes. But you never hear about global warming when it's summertime anywhere else in the world. And
that's not quite true. They have hot summers in Australia, around
they
Christmas
do, but, time. But you don't hear – I mean, granted, I know it's the Southern Hemisphere or whatever, but you don't, even in the wintertime, you don't hear these alarmists and frauds screaming and yelling about temperatures and sea level rising in Australia.
Because I have a lot of contact with Australia. But you know what? It's interesting when you say that, because if global warming is such a problem, why is it cold in half the Earth and warm in the other half? And they switch.
Exactly.
So it's not global warming. It's hemispherical, temporary warming. If you want to think about it.
It's just, I hate to throw science at the science people, our Earth axis, and this is a scientific fact. Our Earth axis is constantly tilting, and we just recently just had one of the biggest tilts. In the history of the Earth, as far as what they've documented. Now, how much we can believe it, I don't know, because science is half of it's made up anyways, and most of it's guessing.
How much did we tilt? I mean, what are we talking about here?
23 inches, I think it was this time.
Oh my God!
Which is
global
it's a
inching.
New record.
Wait a minute, it's global inching.
Yes,
it's almost
but
2 feet.
Where I'm going with this is as our axis tilts more, the climate is going to change, because now you got new places that are getting a little bit closer to the sun.
Right.
You're getting up other places that are further away from the sun, and that's
well,
why,
not closer.
Yeah,
they're just getting more direct. They're getting more direct, more overhead, as opposed
getting closer to.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
No, they are getting closer because of the sun burns up its helium, which is detrimental to the gravitational pull of the sun holding it together. Its outer circumference expands, and that's what's going to take out Mars and everything else at some point in time in the future. Now, people say, well, that's a long ways off. Yeah, but you're closer today than what you were 5 years ago.
Mm.
Correct.
The sun
is still a long ways off.
The other two things that they're not talking about, even though it's in every science book that you've ever read growing up, the Earth doesn't move in a symmetrical circle around the sun. It's an oblong circle. So sometimes the Earth is closer to the sun than other times. And we just happen to be in a part of the cycle right now to where we are actually closer to the sun than we have been in a very long time. And the fact that the sun also does kind of rotate a little bit, and we are now in what's called the dark, we're in the hottest part of the sun, which is the big dark circle you see, radiates more heat than any other part of the sun. So we're just in this bad cycle right now where we're closest to the sun and the sun's radiating more heat than it usually radiates on us, which is causing this warmness. Doesn't matter how much tax dollars you throw at this, you can't move the sun.
If we just go communist, this will all be cured, folks. Don't you know that? If we give up our cars, if we give up our houses, if we start driving electric battery cell things that the power companies are going to cut off anyway, everything will be fine. The sun will just take care of itself, right? And this is how it works.
Yeah, and that's been proven also. Go ahead, Bianca. Go ahead.
When you build huge structures like China built this three gorges dam, it slowed the rotation of the earth down a minuscule amount. It's measurable, but it did slow it down. So that means that we're exposed to the sun more slowly, like a rotisserie, than we were before. So
how does the dam slow the rotation
down? Because you put a large physical weight lathing object where it was never at before. Then it has to contend with that.
It's just like adding bricks
on the back of a turtle.
Right. But the materials for those bricks came from the earth.
We
made up material. It was already here. Might have been spread out a little differently, but all the materials for concrete, you know, the sand, the quartz, the whatever else they put in it, that stuff's already here. So they're transferring.
It'll spread out evenly now, but it's concentrated. I'll try to give you some science information on that.
Yeah.
I could see
where you're talking about with, the bigger the building, the more it works as a sail, which is a deterrent to it moving. But the one thing also that they refuse to talk about is they want to go electric. Well, electric takes a certain type of mineral that you have to dig out of the ground. And it's actually another scientific fact that more energy and heat is produced to get this lithium and other materials that are needed for electric cars than it is to get gas and hydro. So they're actually causing global warming themselves. If we want to believe what they are saying, they're actually causing more global warming than people with gas.
Bianchi? I don't know. I thought he was going to say something.
I got to go earn my dollar for today, but you guys have a good rest of the show, and we will talk more next week.
Sounds good. Okay, we'll just wait for Wendy to join us here in a little bit. We've got Marco in the Netherlands checking in, talking about the climate activists in Australia. I'm not quite sure exactly what his message says. In the year the climate activists blocked this Australia, something suffered a huge wildfire going rampage. So yeah, but wildfires are not caused by what they say, global warming. I mean, if heat made for a fire, we never have a fire in the wintertime. We have fires all the time. So that is kind of silly. This is a big panic. It also says a big panic last month about a fire in the Rhodes. That would be Rhodes, Greece. So, but the same thing. You have wildfires because of mismanagement of forest land. Back in the old days, they used to have controlled burns. And they would let the fires burn. And then somewhere along the way, I guess in the early 1900s, this idea came about that we should not have any forest fires. Smokey the Bear, only you can prevent forest fires. And so there weren't any. And then, of course, the fuel built up more and more and more and more and more. So when they did have a fire, it was a raging crown fire. It was a massive fire, as opposed to a low-level, fire where just a little bit of material was burning and the trees were fine. And so that's the biggest problem with the wildfires. It's not the the climate hasn't changed, but the forest management policies have changed, and they don't seem to see that. Anyway, see you and me, Bianchi, until Wendy joins us. So I was momentarily distracted for a minute. What's on your mind? Anything else going on?
Well, in today's world and society, there's no shortage of having something on your mind, that's for sure.
Well, we got Christina Bob today, which is going to be really cool. We got she's Trump's attorney, and I've got a million questions. As usual, for a big interview, I have overprepared, and I have about 3 hours worth of questions, and she has about 20, 25 minutes with us. So situation normal here. But like I said, we had a little technical glitch this morning, so hopefully she'll resolve that during the show, and we'll have her on time. But there's some stuff going on. Some really fascinating things.
And you know, can I make another point real quick? One of the key things that you and your last guest,
Bill,
is that people are just dumb. They're ignorant. And they can fall for anything, which we see they have.
Well, and this is what's interesting. I think my political theory is that we're celebrating the conformists from the rebels. And what has happened is that the rebels, you know, who maintain our independence, who make our own decisions, whether we want a vaccine or a mask or quote, social distance, or whether we want to stay home or not go to the beach or any other things we want, we make those decisions ourselves. The problem for the left is they're killing off the wrong people for them. You know, the conformists, the ones that are dying, the movie stars, the Hollywood people, the health professional folks that are mandating
athletes,
the real health professionals aren't taking it. You know, you notice that nobody on the staff of the CDC, the NIH, the FDA has suffered any problems. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that no major politicians have had injuries or deaths from the shot, except for Trump's previous wife, Ivana Trump? She died. And we think she might have died from the COVID jab. But you notice Fauci and all of his, none of those folks have had any problems whatsoever. That's because they didn't take it. They didn't take it at all.
But you know what? Another thing people are so reluctant. I don't know if they're getting paid off or what. Like Hank Aaron, he died. And obviously, he took the shots, but no one wants to blame the shots on that.
Oh, we did.
Because
they
didn't understand. Well, yeah, we did. But
remember,
people don't
remember
understand that we're different.
Yeah, well, we're definitely different. But Hank Aaron, I remember the first few COVID deaths, as soon as they started coming out, we called them COVID deaths. Hank Aaron, Marvin Hagler, remember him, the boxer, and Larry King.
Yeah.
Larry King, the talk show host. They all died within hours, days, or maybe a week of getting a COVID shot. I said, well, they're starting. Here you go. You know, and we were right. Anyway, let's get to Wendy, and I'll bring her into this conversation. Here we go. Do you really want the truth? Do you have questions you can't ask in church? Welcome to the Oh My God Report. Wendy Arthur is more concerned with truth than propaganda, putting more value in scripture than religion, and more about you and your relationship with God than your membership in any church. This is Christianity with a Kick. Hey, happy apocalypse, Wendy. How you doing?
Well, there's a mixture for you. Happy apocalypse.
I just thought of it. I was thinking of your graphic last night, the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and I thought, hey, happy apocalypse, Wendy. It just kind of came out.
Well, good morning, Pianchi. Good morning to all of our listeners around the world. We're glad to have you on this morning's Oh My God Report.
I just saw your
comment this morning about the painting I posted about the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. And that was my rendition, of course. There are several much more famous ones out there.
No, I recognize the brushstrokes. I knew it was you, so yeah.
Okay. Google search it. But so you had asked, you know, can we discuss, you know, the symbolism in this this morning? So, yes, we can. So if anybody wants to see what we're talking about, you can go to the Action Radio Oh My God page and see the painting that I put up there of the Four Horsemen. And what's interesting about them is what they are holding in their hands.
That's what I noticed.
And the color of the horses that they are riding on, because the symbolism is very interesting and frightening.
Well, it's the apocalypse. It's not the summer, you know, mosquito infestation. This is serious stuff we're talking here. A biblical proportion,
right?
If I may quote Ghostbusters.
Literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It will cover the world. It's not just going to be little pockets here and there. It will literally cover the world with all of these things. So, if you want to read about it yourself, you can go to Revelation chapter 6. The four horsemen are mentioned between verses 1 and 6. There are seven seals. There's the seven seal judgments, and then there's the seven bowl judgments, which are afterwards. But the I find it very interesting that they only have symbolism. The Lord only chose to do symbolism for the first four seals, which the four horsemen represent. The other three are horrible as well. We think COVID's bad. No, it's not. It can't touch what's coming. It just cannot even touch what's coming.
Well, that was something I want to talk to Bill about. COVID actually wasn't that bad. So the idea of taking a dangerous, you know, fatal, crippling, you know, so-called vaccine for a disease that's not even as strong as your basic flu bug was irrational. And yet that's what millions of people did because out of fear, they were convinced to do anything. So if you want, you know, if you want to say the devil uses fear, I mean, that's a perfect example. It's amazing what people will do with a little bit of fear. And they're not even afraid to write
Well, and now, now they're have commercials out about mpox, okay? Everybody laughed at monkeypox, and nobody ever, you know, even gave that the time of day. So now they have mpox, which is the new variation of monkeypox. They are actually making commercials about it now.
How do you spell it? I've never, this is new to me. I-M-P-O-X?
M, the you know, letter M, and then dash pox.
Oh, because you can't say monkey pox because it's derogatory to African-Americans?
Right.
Is that what it is? Oh, okay, fine. I just want to get that
straight.
You
can't say monkey pox because I think everybody laughed at it.
Well, it's funny.
Anyway, it's ridiculous. But anyway, so...
If we call it jelly bean pox, nobody would take it seriously. You know, if we call it fluffball pox, you know, it's not dangerous. You got to have a nasty name. You got to call it tarantula pox or something like that. Scare people. Speaking of scaring people, back to the apocalypse.
Letters and numbers tended to do the same thing because, you know, like the Delta variant, whatever number followed that, you know, whatever.
Right.
Anyway, so let's get back to the four horsemen. So if you look at the painting, you will see a rider on a white horse, a red horse, a black horse, and then what the scriptures call a pale horse or chartreuse, which is a very pale green, a sickly color green. And what they are holding in their hands corresponds. So the rider on the white horse has a bow in his hand, you know, and the rider on the red horse has a very large sword in his hand, larger than a normal sword. The rider on the black horse has scales in his hand, and the rider on the pale horse has a sickle in his hand, like the death sickle, like the Grim Reaper sickle.
I thought that was a scythe, but I could be wrong. Isn't a sickle a small one and a scythe is the big one? It's like the hammer and sickle on the Russian and the Chinese flag. It's like the agricultural one, but the scythe is the big one for clearing whole wheat fields. I mean, I could be wrong. I think there's a difference.
Tomato, tomato. You know,
let's call the whole thing off.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
I don't care what they call it. You know,
it's a big blade.
I'm just trying to say
big nasty
that,
blade.
That big blade.
Now,
big
all of them are weapons.
Blade, okay.
Yeah, but all
of
the keyed in the scales, except one.
Yes. So we will take a look at that. So the four horsemen, like I said, they correspond with the first four seals of the seven seal judgments that you find in Revelation 6. And the Lamb, and Scripture says that the Lamb, which is Jesus, the Lamb of God, opens the seals because no one is worthy to open the seals, only Jesus because he was sinless and he opened the seals. So when he opened it, now this is when John, the Apostle John, was transported into heaven, and he told him, "You write down everything you see. I'm going to show you things, and you write them down." And this is how the book of Revelation was written. John wrote the book of Revelation by what he actually saw and was shown by God and Jesus in heaven. So when the Lamb, Jesus, opens the first seal, and, you know, in heaven there's what they call living creatures. You know, there's angels and archangels and you know, seraphim and all kinds of stuff.
And they're considered living.
In heaven. Yes, but they are living creatures before the heavenly throne. And one of the living creatures spoke to John in a voice like thunder, and he said, come. And you'll find that in Revelation 6:1.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I'll just read that. It says, John then records what he sees, and he says, I looked, and there before me was a white horse. Its rider held a bow, and he was given a crown, and he rode out as a conqueror bent on conquest.
Hmm.
So let's talk about that. The white horse, now if this is going to be, most scholars believe that this talks about the Antichrist, because
okay.
he's going to come on a white horse, which is like peace. White is peace. And he's going to come saying, peace, peace. And there will be peace for 3.5 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until he shows himself for who he really is, and then you have the desolation of the temple. And sets himself up as God in God's temple.
Mm-hmm.
And when it says that he was given a crown in Daniel, if you go back to Daniel, it talks about a small crown. Yeah, Satan tries to imitate and give a counterfeit for everything that God does. He can't create. Satan cannot create. Only God can create. And so he can look at what's already been created and try to recreate the counterfeit for it. So does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind. And because the Antichrist is a pawn of Satan, he is going to do the same thing. He doesn't build his own temple. He takes the temple of God already built and sets himself up as God in it. And he will have a small crown because he's not God. So
okay.
that's interesting.
Does okay? God wear a crown?
But he is bent. Do what?
Does God wear a crown?
And like nobody's business, he wears a crown.
Okay.
And,
was it another show, but I never thought about that till just now. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and Jesus also wears a crown. Hmm. And if you make it to heaven, we will get crowns
if?
That we will lay.
Did you say if? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, I did say yes, because a lot of people start the race, but not a lot of people finish it. It gets too hard, and they say, I'm done, I'm out.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so just keep in mind that the rider on the white horse is bent on conquest. And I find it interesting that he has a bow in his hand, which is a weapon of war.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see any arrows. He's not carrying a quiver of arrows. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
So,
yeah, I noticed that, but I didn't notice it. It's like I thought, oh, a bow, okay. I'm thinking, I guess there are arrows somewhere, because otherwise why would you carry a bow?
Yes.
But now this makes more
right.
sense.
Your mind
okay.
automatically assumes that there's a quiver of arrows somewhere. But
mm-hmm.
it is not mentioned in Scripture that he is carrying any. He's coming in the name of peace, but the bow is representing.
Okay.
But he's trying to look like he's coming in peace.
Hmm.
So he's not carrying the arrows. He's hiding those. So if you want to look up more about that, about the Antichrist and such, you can go to Revelation chapter 19. So this is for people who want to study later, because, don't take my word for it. Go to the Word of God and see what he says.
Yeah, we don't have time right now for the whole reading of the Revelations, but we'll get it bit by bit. Anyway, who's horse number two? And now, ladies and gentlemen, horse number two of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, presented by Wendy Arthur on the Oh My God Report.
Yes. So when Jesus opens the second seal, the second living creature says to John, come. And so that John can watch and write down, again, he has to record what he sees. In Revelation 6:3, then another horse came out, a fiery red one. Its rider was given power to take peace from the earth and to make men slay each other. To him was given a large sword. And that's why he was given the large sword, because this is a worldwide thing, folks. This is not some little country over there and, near Iraq somewhere,
Ukraine most likely these days.
Do what?
Ukraine most likely these days, as we seem to be backing into another world war, just like one and two, for stupid reasons, but it ends up costing millions of lives. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, this is going to be worldwide, okay? So that's why a lot of people think that right now we are in the seal judgments, and no, we're not. In my opinion, no, we're not. But
right. Go
before the Lord, and you ask him for yourself. But, you know, I see a lot of similarities. I really do. I understand why some people would think that, but the Antichrist has not been revealed yet. So this, to me, that's the main reason why I do not think that we are in the sealed judgments right now. Although I think that you can see a lot of similarities.
Well, you can have bad times without being the end times. I mean, we had World War One was a bad time. You know, World War Two was a bad time. You know, millions of people died. In fact, I think today, the 9th is the anniversary of the atomic bomb in Nagasaki. 3 days ago was the atomic bomb in Hiroshima. These are bad times. Those were bad times. You know, and we can talk about those being necessary. I don't think they were, but we can talk about that another time. But the thing is that this world has been through some really bad times, and it's nothing compared to the ancient times of volcanoes and, you know, atmospheric change and all that other kind of stuff. So this Earth's pretty tough, you know, from dinosaurs to us now.
Well, actually, we're going through atmospheric changes right now, because, you know, we'll talk about feeding of the atmosphere and all that kind of stuff later. But anyway, all of these things that are all of a sudden happening that are not normal. No, I'm sorry. Those are man-made crap. But anyway, let's get back to the guy with a large sword on the fiery red horse.
Exactly.
This second horseman, okay, the guy on the red fiery horse, this is referring to warfare. I mean, terrible warfare. And it's going to break out all over the world in the end times. And those wars, it has to include the Antichrist's rise to power. Because if he's calling for peace the first 3.5 years, saying peace, peace, right? That's what the scripture says. He's saying peace, peace, all the world. But when the rider with the red horse comes out, the Antichrist is going to reveal himself and his plan for what he really is. And that's when all of the wars and the deaths and all that kind of stuff is going to come about, because he has to take out three other kings, three other country rulers in that time. So just be aware that it's not just people getting angry with each other. This is country rulers, major country rulers, that are going to be taken out by the Antichrist so that he can take over their regions as well, and which is necessary because he's going to come against Israel. So,
well, see, now this is where it gets interesting. So does the Revelations mention countries that we would be able to identify today? For example, China, Russia, the United States, Israel, obviously Israel. But, I mean, is it recognizable enough that we can determine who these countries are, or is it more...
Yeah, well, it talks about them in symbolism. It talks about the great dragon. It talks about the bear. It talks about the eagle. So we know
that's us.
Countries represent. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you have to understand scriptures. Get into it. Start studying it, y'all, because, you know, it's coming. It's coming. And if you weren't prepared,
what's my view, Wendy? Personal scriptural. That's why you're here, my personal scriptural analyst and everything else. I mean, this, you know. Anyway, Bianca, did you have a question?
Well, I don't think that's going to fly.
Okay,
when you stand before God, I'm not going to be there. And you can't
take the pizza. I'll start my reading between shows. Sorry, God.
There you go. Anyway, okay.
Let me give you some appropriate apocalyptic music for the next horse person.
Okay.
And now, the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, presented by Wendy Arthur on the Oh My God Report. Oh my God. Here they come with a bow, a sword, the scales, and the scythe, otherwise known as a sickle. Anyway, sorry about that. I'm just having too much fun here.
All right, so, well, we've got 10
Number
minutes
three.
Left in the segment, so we're going to try to get through the last two. So the Lamb, Jesus,
right.
He then opens the third seal, Okay. Now you have to understand that this is not like, you know, a couple of days after each other. Time is in between for all of the stuff to happen that has to happen.
Okay.
So when he opens the third seal, according to Revelation 6:5, you know, again, when he opens the third seal, the third living creature tells John, come. John's looking so he can record, and the third horseman then appears. And that's the one on the black horse carrying the scales. And scripture says, there before me was a black horse. Its rider was holding a pair of scales in his hand. Then I heard what sounded like a voice among the four living creatures saying, a quart of wheat for a day's wages and 3 quarts of barley for a day's wages, and do not damage the oil and the wine. So. The black horse represents famine and scarcity, like of biblical proportions. This is not okay. going to be, they were out of my favorite brand at the grocery store. This is, if you want a loaf of bread, you are going to give an entire day's wages for a loaf of bread.
Well, they're doing that now in places. Now, does it take into account currency? You look at currency devaluations in places with hyperinflation like Venezuela, you know, post-World War II Germany and other places where they would have wheelbarrows worth of money because it was worthless. A $1 billion Venezuelan dollars for a loaf of bread. You know, some ridiculous, because the money was so worthless. But that's how it is. So is currency tied into this as well? Because I know that's a big deal with the world economic folks.
Well, yeah, because if there is famine, it's not just you may have some kind of form of currency that you're going to be trading for things and bartering with stuff. But if you want to buy bread, you are going to pay an entire day's wages for it.
Okay.
And anything else?
Kind of where we're headed with inflation. Inflation could be thought of in terms of, inflation, digital control of the currency, all the stuff that's going on right now in many ways is creating famine, ruining the economy and all these other kinds of things. So a lot of these things are not direct. When they say famine, you think of like the wheat fields all burning up and all that kind of stuff, but it doesn't have to be that way. This can be just a scarcity, a cut in the supply lines, like the toilet paper shortage. That kind of stuff, which caused mass panic, especially they had it in Venezuela. Then we got it here for no reason because we have plenty of trees and paper.
Right.
And yet people still hoarded and bought mass amounts of toilet paper. Oh, no. So scarcity, the danger in scarcity is the actual scarcity, but it's also the perception and the actions from the perception of scarcity.
And if you take a look at things like right now, they're trying to ruin all of our food, so that we stay sick. But where is all the good stuff going? The elites have it hoarded for them, right?
Yeah.
They're eating
the
good stuff. They're staying healthy. They aren't taking the jab. The whole nine yards, they will have all the good stuff. So if you'll notice what he says in here in this verse, a quart of wheat for a day's wages and 3 quarts of barley for a day's wages, that's for the people who are being oppressed and trying to be made into slaves, right?
Right.
But it says, and do not damage the oil and the wine. Who's going to have that? If you can't afford a loaf of bread, how are you going to get oil and wine? Who's getting that?
Yeah, the elites. It's the same old thing.
The elites.
Beef for them, bugs for us. That's the philosophy.
Exactly right.
But we don't have to put up with that kind of stuff. We can. It's not to the point now where it's apocalyptic. We can still change that. People aren't directed and they're not organized to do that. But it certainly is well within the capacity of us to change that. See, I thought the scales were justice, the law. When I saw those scales, I thought this was the courts were going to be taking over. Go ahead.
Back then they didn't have cups, right? They weighed their grain.
Right.
You get this much grain, you get a quart of grain for this, or you get, this. They weighed everything, and it also represents false scales. Scripture talks about using false scales are an abomination to the Lord. They would weight one side of the scale so that it would show that you were getting say you were buying a pound of something, you know, just mm-hmm. like we walk into a butcher shop and you say, I want a pound of smoked turkey. So mm-hmm. they would, you'd be watching the scales and it looks like you're getting a pound of turkey, but you're really not. You're only getting 3/4 of a pound of turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah, they do that
so
now with
you're
products.
Paying for a full pound. But
yeah, you think you're getting a pound and you're only getting 14
is,
ounces. Yeah, they're changing the measure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and to God says that is an abomination.
Interesting.
It's about deceit. It's about dishonesty. It's about cheating people that mm-hmm. they have worked hard and they're paying you for something and they're not getting what they're paying for. God gets ticked off about that.
Well,
so,
that's really interesting. Yeah, but yeah, I'm thinking, well, it's really interesting because people say, well, it's not Christian or godly. If someone wants to take your TV, you should give it to them. Property's not worth anything. I'm like, yeah, it is. It's worth the labor that you put into it, the investment, everything else. Your property, you know, is a major stake of your life. You know, your salary, the salt, you know, and measuring that correctly, you know, I think that's something we should explore more because there's a lot more justice to economics than I think we know about from scripture. People don't think about it, but it's really there. And as you're telling me now, I'm finding more about it. Okay.
Yes. So, and also, you know, when God says, you have been weighed in his scales, not the world's scales. You've been weighed in his scales and found wanting. That's a judgment. That's saying you did not measure up to what God said you were supposed to be doing. And because his scales are true, you know, they can't be weighted. They can't, they're not dishonest in any way. So because everything here is a shadow of what is already in place in heaven. When God says he has scales that he's measuring people on, he's weighing mm-hmm. people on, if you are found wanting, it's not because you screwed up a couple times, that you are, that's talking about your heart condition.
Hmm.
So it's a serious thing. But anyway, so when food is scarce and the prices are inflated beyond reason, we already think they're inflated beyond reason. We haven't seen nothing yet. But when the command to spare the oil and the wine, those will be luxuries, absolute luxuries, and nobody of normal living is going to be able to afford those. So it's interesting to me that this was actually mentioned. So just keep an eye out for that. And then on the fourth seal, this is the pale horse, the sickly green color horse. With the guy with the side of the sickle, whatever you have on there.
We'll debate it out of the air.
It says, when the lamb breaks open the fourth seal, when Jesus says, I'm opening the seal, the fourth living creature says, come to John. John looks, and he writes down, I looked, and there before me was a pale horse. Its rider was named Death, and Hades was following close behind him. Nobody talks about that. They were given power over a fourth of the earth to kill by sword, famine, and plague, and by the wild beasts of the earth. So, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Because death, obviously, is being portrayed by the pale horse and the guy with you know, the harvesting tool in his
big
hand.
Blade,
yeah,
side, sickle
for death
thing. Right.
But Hades was following close behind him. Hades is the place of the dead. We interchange it with hell, but it's the place of the dead. And it was following close behind death. So they were given power over a fourth of the earth. Think about that. A quarter of there are 8 billion people on earth. A quarter of that. Is going to be killed by sword, famine, and plague, and wild beasts of the earth. We are seeing nature turning against man already. I don't know if anybody's noticed, but you'll be seeing more and more reports of people being attacked by alligators and bears and other animals. Like some guy I just saw was attacked by his own house cat. I mean, that cat was going after him like, I'm going to kill you, and wouldn't stop.
Well, we just saw a video. Yeah, there's a video of a shark swimming amongst swimmers at Navarre Beach, WEARTV, and it's on my environmental project action radio page and on my own page. And it's just swimming amongst people, and they're like, they're getting out of the water, except for one guy's way out, you know, with the sharks between that person and the beach, which is kind of interesting. But the shark's in maybe 3 feet of water. Just swimming right through everybody. Yeah.
Yep. Hi, I'm here.
Yeah.
Good thing I'm not
there.
Hungry.
Yeah, so these people that go swimming with sharks in the shark cages in San Francisco, it's like, oh, great idea. Go, I hope you enjoy it. But, you know, not me. Nope. Not this guy.
Well.
Huh.
So when the horseman on the pale horse shows up, Death, with Hades close behind him.
Right.
Now, keep in mind, there's already, you know, great wars and great killing everywhere and scarcity and famine and all the well. Now comes along on top of the famine and the high prices that are ridiculous and the wars going on and people dying everywhere. Now you have this guy coming along and he's bringing more warfare, terrible famines, awful plagues and diseases, and then add in nature turning on you and being attacked by wild animals that you normally wouldn't even see.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a fourth of the world's population will die.
Wow.
So you're talking 2 billion people are going to die during this seal opening. So these are just precursors of what's going to be happening because there's still 3 other seals to open.
Oh, this is just the introduction?
Yeah, well, this is the first 4 of the 7 seals of judgment. So go read Revelation chapter 6 and actually chapters 8 and 9 and 16 if you want to see about all the seals. But this is going to be an absolutely horrific time. Horrific. We can't even – our minds can't even grab a hold of this, honestly, about how bad it's going to be. So the good news is – if you are a believer and you are hanging true until, you know, the rapture happens, we're not going to be here for some of this, actually for all of it, because once the Antichrist is revealed, you know, we're gone pretty much if you're hanging in there and you are, you know, staying faithful. So, but this is letting people know what is going to happen and that you don't have to be in this. You don't have to be involved in this. These are judgments on the earth from the Lord. That's when, it's literally the end of life as we know it. And then at the end of that 7 years, it's done. You know, then you go into the millennial reign and all that kind of stuff. So it's just really important to know that as bad as this stuff is, and we honestly can't even wrap our minds around it because we have never seen devastation and horrific, heinous acts like this. We have not seen them. As bad as the Holocaust was, as bad as, you know, some of the other things that we've lived through have been, it's nothing compared to what's coming. We don't have to be a part of it. So, you know, bow now, avoid the rush.
Yeah, and that's the critical part of it. Bonnie's here. I'm going to make her line live. But that is so critical, I think, that this is not an inevitable thing. We don't have to, you know, call this judgment down. There's no, you know, real reason for it to happen. You know, if we individually and you know, as a planet, you know, change our behavior, change our beliefs. And there's like, it's like knowing about this is like the big warning. Okay, so you know what can happen. But it doesn't have to happen.
Yes.
And I think that part's missing. Everybody thinks of this as not only apocalyptic, but predetermined. And I don't think that's necessarily the case.
Well, if the entire world returns to the Lord, you know, then no, it doesn't have to happen. But knowing human nature.
Well, that's the problem. Humans are more inclined to fear and to go for the most basic emotions. You know, look at COVID. COVID was a perfect example of, you know, people becoming irrational based on a fear of something that they were already probably immune to, which is fascinating.
Yeah, well, when only 30% of the population didn't buy into it, what does that tell you?
Yeah.
Most of the
really proud to be in that 30%. In fact, we were the earliest part of that 30%. We never bought into it, not for a second, which I'm proud to say.
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bonnie?
But.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, I'm in the same boat. I never bought into it either.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I got to pick up Jonathan's line too. He's calling an hour early, but that's okay. I'll let him know. He'll see if he wants to join us for a few minutes. If not, then I'll get him back in the next hour. Let's get your information, Wendy, and then as always, you're welcome to stick around, or I'll just harass Bonnie for an hour.
and good morning, Bonnie. I know you can handle it.
Thanks, Wendy.
Ask any questions, or if you need some other information where I can point you to in scriptures, then get a hold of me on Facebook. You can find me at Wendy Arthur, Art by Wendy Arthur, or Dimensions Ministries. And as I said earlier, bow now, avoid the rush.
Here we go. All right, let me just pick up Jonathan's line real quick before we get into Bonnie's report. Jonathan, you're an hour early. Did you want to stick around, or you want to call back?
Oh, I thought you said 9. All right.
Well, it's 9 o'clock Central, 10 o'clock Eastern. But that's okay. I goofed. It happens all the time.
I thought it was 9 o'clock Florida time. That was like...
Well, I am Florida, but I'm in one of those 10 counties that actually is in Central time. I apologize.
Yeah. No, your time zones frighten and confuse me. Your modern...
Well, I like being Central because then the West Coast is only 2 hours away instead of 3 hours. So I figure that the East Coast can always sleep in an hour. That's easy for East Coast people. That's where a lot of our guests come from anyway.
Well, that's fine. I thought I was late. So
no, you're fine. Yeah, you're actually early. See, it worked out great. See, time zone saved you. Central time saved you, Jonathan. Look at the bright side.
Well, I don't mean to interrupt your flow. I just looked at that. I'm just trying to finish up a friend of the court brief to the Supreme Court to try to get one guy to sign it. And
well,
I look up.
Is that what you're doing? Then I suppose you can. That's more important than talking to us. Okay, fine. Be that way. I'm teasing you.
No, I'm actually pretty finished with it.
Okay.
Unless it's one of those things that's never finished, but.
Hang on for a little bit. We'll see what Bonnie's got in mind, and then you can join in or just mute for a while till Christina gets here.
I guess it's her time, so go ahead.
Okay, well, let's start with her theme, and away we go. There she sits, behind the microphone, a mild-mannered radio talk show host, news and weather person. But that's only part of the story. She's really a secret agent. Meet Bonnie Nesbitt, or as we address her, Bond, Jane Bond. Jane Bond travels the world incognito, trying to ferret out the world's most interesting stories and talking to the world's most dangerous people. So join us now as we go into the secret world of our secret agent, Bonnie Nesbitt, with her secret report, available exclusively on Action Radio. And now, Bonnie Nesbitt, also known as Jane Bond, with The Bond Report on Action Radio. You know, I think when I made that, I was a little enthralled with my own voice. I need to take about 30 seconds off, maybe about 20 seconds off that. A little repetitive, so I'm gonna make a new one, and we'll sort of have the edited Bond Report. But I occasionally make big long themes, but I'll work on that. I need to make it a little snappier. But I was feeling creative one morning, and I said, "Well, let's get that microphone voice." And you know, it's kind of fun to be on the radio. That's why we do it. You know, the people that hate the sound of their own voice don't do radio because you know you wouldn't last very long. I can't stand my voice. Right. I can't hear my voice in my head. Yeah, it doesn't work anyway. So what cataclysmic, apocalyptic, cheery things have you brought to us this week?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, with Wendy talking about the end times and nature kind of fighting back against man, it literally ties into something that I was looking at that caught my attention. And that was just increase in the solar flares we keep reading about the activity. And I guess on Monday, even when I was listening to you, this could have been a fluky thing, but when I was listening live, it kept cutting out. Like, I was listening live and my signal kept stopping. I'm like, what is going on? I'm literally in Wi-Fi. It shouldn't be doing this. There was actually a solar flare, like a, I guess it was a 3 on their scale of a 5-point scale.
Huh.
And it was interrupting radio and satellite signals all day Monday.
Share with the FBI. We know they listen,
Yeah, you can't blame the FBI, or you can. They might be inventing the solar flares. It could very well be just, you know, code name solar flare is FBI interruption. But
exactly.
There's another one that was predicted.
Solar flare interruption.
Yeah.
Thank you, FBI. FBI, KGB. KGB, FBI. FBI, KGB.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Huh. One and the same. No, the CME is what they refer to these solar flares as. And I was like, what does CME stand for? It actually stands for coronal mass ejections, which I find extremely hysterical.
That sounds like sex talk. There's something wrong here.
That's exactly what I thought.
Okay.
It's exactly the first thing that came to mind.
We got some nerdy scientist who hasn't gotten any in a while is thinking of this sexual term for a solar flare. Okay, fine. If that's what our government spends our tax dollars on, okay. What is CME one more time? So, you know, one more
CME
letter.
CME stands for.
Put a vowel in there and it gets really bad. But we'll just hold off on that for a second here. Sorry.
Coronal.
That kind of day, folks.
Coronal. So we kind of got corona in there with COVID. So it's coronal mass ejection.
Ejection. You got to make sure you say that one correctly. Ejection. We don't want to have a coronal mass. You know what? Okay, fine. Now, a corona actually is a scientific term, right?
It's a crown.
It's the crown. It's the outside of something. So a coronavirus is something that's on the outside of the cell. A solar flare on the sun's corona, you know, is on the outside of the sun. That's where solar flares are. They don't go internally.
Right.
You'd never see them. But solar flares are generally an indication of increased solar activity, which means more warmth. And
exactly.
Bianchi back in because he knows about this kind of stuff. That sort of goes against the Maunder minimum and some of the other and the reduced solar activity for the next 30 years. So are the solar cycles conflicting with each other and canceling each other out? Do we have increased solar flares, which is actually a good thing, shows the sun's more active and it's not cooling. I don't want cooling. I want warming. Warm may make you miserable, but cooling will kill you. More people die in the cold than the warm.
Right.
That's a known fact.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and then I saw off of
Except
the Oregon coast, there's actually a lot of warming going on there as well. Like, that's been another huge point that they're talking about. I just found out this past week, Indiana, where I live, is predicted to have a very, very harsh winter, like one of the harshest we've seen in a long time because of supposedly these warming temps in the Pacific Ocean that are going to affect the jet stream and how it carries the weather over and dips down into Indiana. Because I'm really up high. I'm near Lake Michigan, right on the border of Indiana and Michigan. So very close to Lake Michigan. And we often get lake effect snow and lake effect weather. But this is supposed to be an intentional dipping down based on that warm weather. And it will bypass most of New York and Pennsylvania and then cut back up to the easternmost part of New England. So you're talking New Hampshire and Maine, on par with what they would normally get. We haven't seen a winter with feet of snow in quite a while, like many, many years. When I was a kid, I used to build up the snow banks and the snowplows would go, and I can remember having 5-foot high piles to play in on the side of the road. But it's been quite a while since anything like that has happened. So we'll see. We'll see. It should be interesting to see if it actually comes to fruition based on the warming and solar flare activity that they if everything cycles together, who knows? Who knows?
Well,
but interestingly enough, Biden actually sat down too to discuss the increase of global warming and climate change of all outlets. As we know, he doesn't give one-on-one interviews because he's scared to death of anything that's not on a teleprompter and tells him to sit down and stand up. But he actually sat down with Weather Channel to do a one-on-one.
Oh, really?
Yes. They got to interview him on the Weather Channel so he could talk all about combating climate change on a channel that's quote unquote not political. And that cracked me up. Of all the channels, it's like reaching out to people that don't normally watch politics. Who can we reach? Let's see. Well, maybe we'll reach out to Grandpa in the chair who likes to watch the Weather Channel nonstop. We'll reach out to him and tell him how.
Let's give him the perfect audience and just put him on Sesame Street. Well, of course, he's probably bringing a drag queen.
There,
so that would be a good idea.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, he already is. If you look at any Sesame Street character, the indoctrination is already there for children ages 3 and up. It's essentially, he is the best puppet available. Why not? I mean, they're all puppets on Sesame Street. Just, you know, give him the Elmo voice and go for it. It's the same thing.
Cookie.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cookie Monster. Oh, no one comes to mind right now. I'm better at, I think we did Kermit. Did we do Kermit last week?
Kermit the Frog. Okay, fine.
You did.
All right. So,
Kermit.
Let's talk about the weather. Yeah.
This is fascinating. The whole idea of weather and politics, you know, it's such a such an easy out for them because they can use anything. You know, the summer gets hot.
Yeah.
Well, that's because the summer gets hot, right? You know, and they say, well, look, it's climate change. Or this is even better. The winter cold is because of the summer heat. It's climate change. Okay. So call me crazy. But generally when things cool down, it's the lack of heat, not the excess of heat. So how are they relating this now? And well, I know how the jet stream works. Bianchi knows how it works too, because we're both pilots. And so we know that the jet stream is a 200 mile an hour plus blast of air that starts up high in the Arctic, up way up in Alaska, and it comes way down. And the lower it dips, depending on atmospheric pressure, things like that, the lower the pressure, the further it dips, the lower the cold air goes. And those of us here in the panhandle of Florida, which is central time, compared to Jonathan, which is on Eastern time, we in the central time zone, we get the Alabama blast down from the north. So the Indiana weather you get is going to be down here in a few days. We've had snow in Florida here in the panhandle. When I first got here, we got snow my first year. And so it does happen. We get freezes. I get greater temperature difference here than I did in San Francisco, California, which because of the moderating fog in the summertime, we had 55 in the winter and 65 in the summer. It was amazing, except for a couple of hot weeks in the spring and fall.
Yeah.
That's the most moderate climate in the world. That's why people live there. But where the jet stream goes, but it changes every year. I mean, it always changes.
Right.
You know, because weather, is temperature, pressure, gravity, Coriolis effect, I mean, all that stuff ties in. Rotation, tilt, 23 inches of difference now. So, you know, on the wobble, all that stuff's going to play in. Everything plays in. That's why you can never predict the weather. You can only report what was because there's too many variables. Not even the biggest computer can take into account all the variables. So let's go to the most authoritative source out there. What does the Farmer's Almanac say about your winter?
Mm-hmm.
Farmer's Almanac
is actually the one that was predicting a harsh winter as well. I think it actually kind of came from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The farmers know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't Ben Franklin start that?
Yep.
If I remember.
You know, I don't know who actually originated the Farmer's Almanac.
Okay. I know he used it. He may have started it. You know, I think it's a purely American thing, but it's very accurate. And so, what does a harsh winter mean? You know, in terms of, in fact, we were talking about this earlier with Bill and Pianchi that, you know, people are reporting, oh no, it's an incredibly hot summer. You know, when we're in Australia, you know, when we're in the winter, you know, and I've lived through Australian summers. It's weird how a white Christmas down there is on a white sandy beach because it's, you know, it's the hot. December 25th is generally the hottest day of the year because December 21st is the longest day of the year in Australia.
The longest, yeah.
Yeah, because everything reverses down there. So if the world, you know, is split between night and day, day is hot, night is cool, and the northern hemisphere is hot and the southern hemisphere is cool, and then they reverse themselves, you know, so the climate change, the climate is always changing depending on where you are, but there's natural cycles of cold and hot. And so to say that, you know, that this is kind of weird or strange or somehow, some years are colder. This thing that fascinates me, this big prediction they make, so, well, because of the climate change that we're telling you about, that only just happened, and we only just discovered it a few years ago, is responsible for every variation in the planet from years of some storms to no storms to more storms. They blame everything on this one thing. It's absurd, and yet people are falling for it. Oh, it must be climate change.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. We're going to get more storms because of climate change.
Of course.
No, you're going to get more storms because the conditions are right. Fascinating.
Well, do you remember back in the 90s? When the terms were first introduced of, going to have a weirder than average summer or stranger amount of precipitation in the winter because of El Nino and La Nina. Do you remember concept was first introduced?
No, those are real.
Real. I'm saying that they were never really talked about prior to the 90s. Like when you went to school and you learned about weather, I remember environmental science. We did not learn about El Nino and La Nina impacting weather patterns. It was all about you're learning about your cumulus and your stratus and your cirrus clouds. You're learning about condensation and precipitation. You're not learning about weather patterns and the jet stream and all of that. So when they first came up with the terminology for that weather system being a thing, it seemed to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seemed to me it was right about the same time that the whole concept of climate change, global warming, came together. Think about
it. No, I don't think so. I'll tell you why. Because I'm older.
Go ahead.
I remember back in the 70s. In fact, I've posted several times this YouTube video of Leonard Nimoy shortly after the Star Trek series concluded prematurely, talking about the global winter that's coming. And he takes a picture of this whiteout, this tundra whiteout, and all he sees is this massive blizzard. He's like, this could happen to your town in Tampa, Florida, you know, anytime. I was like, what are you talking about, you stupid moron? You know, go back to Star Trek. At least you were interesting to watch then. But it was global cooling. And so if you look up the science of this, it's really quite interesting that global cooling was the big thing, because there's always an apocalypse. There's always a, you know, doom and gloom coming. There's always someone says the world's going to end unless you, you know, adopt communism, right? This is communism is behind it. You give up your house, you give up your car, give up your independence, give up your travel, give up your guns, and all of a sudden, you know, the days will be more moderate in temperature. Oh, give me a break. You know, but that's what they're saying. That's what they're trying to convince you of, that if you do what they say, that through legislation and political change, we can actually change the weather. That's impossible.
No, I understand that. Yeah, I understand that. But but the global cooling that you're talking about transitioned around the time that I'm thinking. It was actually 1988. Global warming became the new term, where they were talking about the depletion of the ozone layer. And I remember them saying, stop using aerosol hairsprays. We're killing the ozone. That was 1988. And it was around the same time that they started talking about, now we're really having a lot of increased activity with El Nino and La Nina. I remember listening, and I'm just fascinated with how it transitioned from the global cooing to the warming.
Yeah, I got in California.
But you know what?
With the El Nino and La Nina, because it happened right off our coast. That's explaining our years of incredible rainfall. Yeah, go ahead, Bianchi.
No, with the deployment of satellites, they are able to observe jet stream and other weather patterns. And, you know, we were talking in the last hour about the Earth's rotation is slowing down. It naturally does it about every 30 years, according to some scientists. But when you build these huge construction projects like the Three Gorges Dam in China, what you're doing is increasing in the moment of inertia, like an ice skater when they spin it, when the arm is out, it slows down. When it brings the arm closer to the body, it speeds up. And the Earth is slowing down. And when it slows down, it's like a rotisserie. It's exposed to the sun slower than what it was before. The Earth spins about 1,000 miles an hour.
Now, is it speeding up again? Is this a cycle, or is this a permanent slowing that's always been going on?
It's slowing down. It slows down. We have 24 hours a day, right? So you're
right.
And the Earth's circumference is about 25,000 miles. So you got to divide that by 24 hours, and that tells you how many miles per hour that the Earth is spinning. And
so do our clocks have to change?
When you slow it down, you throw more of the Earth, it bulges out at the center, right? And the more it bulges out at the center, it gets closer to the sun. So it's going to heat up. And those air currents that develop in, like in the African continent and around the equator, is what's called those convections of hot air to start moving around.
So if the Earth is slowing down, hang on, this is interesting, because if the Earth is slowing down, that means our days are getting longer, because the Earth rotates once in 4 hours. So are our days getting longer?
Correct.
Yes, they are, by
1.7 milliseconds.
Per day, year, per what?
Basically, when I looked at it, the atomic clocks are just saying that the modern day is longer by 1.7 milliseconds than a century ago. So you're talking over the course of 100 years, it's now 1.7 milliseconds longer. It's very minimal.
So a millisecond is a thousandth of a second.
No.
Correct.
Oh, yeah.
Jonathan?
I was going to ask, what exactly is a millisecond, just for the audience?
Yeah.
So
1.7
milliseconds of a second. It's 0.06 or something like that.
Yeah. So that's not very much, but in the grand scheme of things, with the billions of year old Earth. So how fast was the Earth originally spinning? Ooh, there's a question.
Who knows?
Well, it was spinning. Well, it goes to the. It still uses that formula. You have to take the circumference of the Earth and divide it by 24. Now, as the circumference of the Earth increases, in other words, it bulges out at the equator. Uh-huh. Well, now you're using different numbers. You're taking a larger number and dividing it by 24. So right. The Earth is slowing down. It's just like a rotisserie. You ever cook on a rotisserie? It's turned at a certain speed, and you can time how long it takes the meat to cook. Well, if you slow it down, what happens? The meat cooks faster because it's exposed to the heat and heat longer than it would if it was turning fast. It's okay to touch the hot stove real fast, but if you slow your movement down and let your skin stay in contact it longer, it's going to burn more.
Okay.
Well, the only argument I would have against that.
Go ahead, Bonnie.
I was just going to say it's such a gradual process. I just looked at something really quick, and it's basically stating that in the past 2,740 years, the Earth's spin has slowed by about 6 hours. So basically, billions of years ago, our day was only about 19 hours instead of 24, roughly, according to this. And that's just based on their quote-unquote science. But that's like so many years. Even in 2,740 years, there's no explanation as to why, if it's happened in that amount of time, we've gotten an additional 6 hours of daylight, why all of a sudden the alarmists are coming out and saying, we have to stop now or our Earth is going to be destroyed in 10 years. It's not speeding up that fast, the destruction of everything that they claim.
Yeah, but the thing you got to take into account there, a billion years ago, the sun's diameter was smaller than what it is now. As it expends this helium fuel at its core, it expands and gets closer and closer, and it's its outer dimension. So at some point in the future, the sun is going to encompass, like, for instance, Mars. Now, people say, oh, that's a billion years from now. Well, the logical explanation is it's closer today than it was 500 years ago. So you're closer to the sun's heat today than you were 500 years ago. Another 500, you're going to be closer yet. At some point in time, human life will be, the oceans will evaporate and human life will be gone.
Are you trying to brighten my day or something?
No, it's just plain
science. I don't
think
you have to worry,
right?
Greg. We'll be long gone by then.
Well, and this is what's interesting, you know, especially if you get these. I remember watching one of the Doctor Who episodes from, you know, like 100,000 years in the future, and people were, you know, I guess, you know, I don't know what there were, some strange form. It is quite fascinating. Marco says from the Netherlands, he says, yes, when I woke up this morning, I thought I could use 1.6 milliseconds more sleep. So Marco's there right with us. No, I mean, not to.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, of all the things I have to worry about today, and there are plenty, this, you know, I'm just trying for our freedom, you know. And so in the however many years I have, you know, before I'm done, there's certain things I want to accomplish. And worrying about, you know, it's interesting to note, but quite frankly, if I can leave behind a legacy of freedom, I'll feel pretty happy. You know, if I can leave this a freer country with all of you, than the way we found it and the way it's going right now, that'll be a huge accomplishment. Maybe they'll look back on us, you know, when the Earth slows down, you know, 30 seconds and say, wow, gee, it was an interesting time back then. They almost lost their freedom. Yeah.
You know, another thing, too, mm-hmm. these human beings will undergo psychological and physical effects. They're mm-hmm. going to change because your environment is changing. I mean, we are a product of our environment. People at the equator are a little shorter than those up at the polar region. You stand on a bathroom scale on the equator, you're going to weigh more than you would if you stood on a scale at the, you know, in Nova Scotia. So mm-hmm. physiological changes is going to cause a physiological, climatic changes, environmental changes are going to cause you to change physically. And good gracious, you can't surely deny that people ain't acting crazy today. Come on.
Well, that's actually a really good point. Let's talk about that, and because I think it's fascinating. And the question is it environmental or political or both? You know, what's causing this? But we've had crazy times before. You know, the Roaring Twenties, you know, was like the big party, thanks to Calvin Coolidge and his great economic plan. But basically, people went nuts. And then, of course, with Prohibition, they went nuts again. And they said to the government, screw you, we're drinking. You know, mass rebellion. you know, against the policy. It's funny what people won't rebel against. They won't rebel against inflation. They will rebel against prohibition. But these are definitely crazy times. I mean, there's a lack of respect for authority of all kinds. You know, your neighborhood police officer, you know, when we were kids, you know, they were the authority. They said, you know, stay on the curb. You know, now, of course, police get attacked, you know, for wearing a uniform. So these are very different times. But is it political or environmental or both? It's an interesting question. And why are we tolerating this kind of nonsense? You know, why do we tolerate the protests, the Antifa Black Lives Matter protests? Why do we tolerate, this is what I'll talk to Christina Bob about when she joins us in about half an hour. Why are we tolerating a coup? Why do people even say President Biden, knowing full well there is no such thing? There is no such title. There is no such person as President Biden. There is Joe Biden, who is occupying the White House illegally, but there is no President Biden, and we all know it. But people say it like it's somehow a thing. Like if they don't say it, you know, then they're looked upon as weird. But I look upon them as weird for saying it, knowing full well that the election was stolen. And the people that know it was stolen the most are the Democrats, because they're the ones that stole it. So this idea, this fantasy that's going on, that this election wasn't stolen. You want to talk about blinders. You want to talk about a misperception, and people are focusing on everything and anything else. Oh, Joe Biden caused inflation. He can't cause anything. He's not even supposed to be there. That's right. The fundamental problem. We don't even get to the basics. The most basic problem is our country has gone through what all other countries go through at some point in time, a coup d'etat, where your government is stolen. You know, you look at, you know, Lenin, Mao, Hitler, Mussolini, and now Biden. Every one of them, well, of course, a lot of them are democratically elected. I mean, the weird part is that Mussolini and I think Hitler were actually elected, you know, and I don't know if it was a free and fair election, but they, you know, but look at Biden. We know that election was stolen. We know it's a crock. It's a myth. It's not happening. So you want to talk about mass denial? That is far more, I think, important and it affects than what's going on, you know, the weather, as much as the weather, it is interesting. But
Greg,
I don't think it, yes, Jonathan.
So how can you be thinking about, you know, ballots when we're all going to die? I mean, like,
right?
You know, it's like, don't pay any attention to those, that election, you know, election data, because, you know, you have to scream, you know, run back and forth screaming that we're all dying and, you know, the children are going to die in 12 years. And, you know, so we don't have time to think about things like whether the election was stolen.
Yeah, well, here's a good point. If we're all going to die in, you know, so many years, how come the elites aren't making plans? You know, they're thinking world government, they're thinking down the line, you know, we're all going to be eating bugs. Why, how come you guys aren't packing up and having a vacation? If we're all going to die in a few years, I mean, why aren't they at Acapulco watching the cliff divers? You know, why aren't they having
That's something you don't want to tell humans. Kind when they're going to die, because the closer and closer they get, the crazier and crazier they act. They'll be trying to hide in holes in the ground and everything else.
Which gets back
to
what you
talk about Biden
with the apocalypse.
You know,
yeah,
the Biden economy, inflation, and what it has done. Now, the counter inflation, they're doing what? Raising interest rates. That means that you're going to be paying more for your credit card debt, which you had to do because of, you know, you was
you weren't making
money.
Enough money. Yeah, your salary wasn't covering.
Well, they're robbing
expenses.
You again.
Yeah. Okay. Now here's all right. So let's talk about that. This is really interesting. This is another Christina Bob point that I'd like to make. We have and have had for over a year now a constitutional amendment that would prevent Congress from borrowing any more money. That would end inflation. Mm-hmm. That would cause deflation. That would basically that also eliminates the Fed. You know, because there's a provision in there calling for no central bank. You know, what this bill would do is unbelievable. Lots of people know about it because I've sent it out in press releases and I've been publicizing this for over a year. And yet there's an incredible lack of excitement. In fact, most people don't even notice, know about it or are saying anything about it. And yet there it is. So why do we live in a society where the solutions we've already provided, you know, is it too simple? Do people just think, oh, that can't be that easy when it is that easy? So the crazy people are the ones that aren't going along with this. The crazy ones are the ones that are saying, you know, this can't happen. But of course it can happen. All it takes is 2/3 of the Congress and 3/4 of the states to end inflation forever. Well, until it's amended. Why is that such a hard concept?
It's a great question. I don't know why it's such a hard concept for people to grasp unless they're just not paying attention to that aspect. They're too distracted with global warming to care about that. I don't know.
Right. John,
so
I mean,
I don't know
what this has to do with global warming, but you understand that there is an embedded industry
and fooling people into think that that government spending money, you know, can make the country better. It's literally like the old joke about holding yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, floating in midair I mean, what you're saying, Greg, we'd be a lot closer if there was some kind of consensus of the obvious. It's like, there's a tree. Like, no, that's not a tree. That's a statue of a tree or something. You know, there's a built-in scam for more federal spending, and people, I mean, if you go back and read some of the things in the 1930s from the FDR administration, where they spent all this money, and by the end in congressional hearings, FDR's treasurer says it didn't work. You know, we spent all this money, and mm-hmm. yes, they got out of the Great Depression, but
not
you
because
know,
they
it,
spent
it
money,
doesn't
though.
Work.
No,
we got
like
out of the depression
else,
because of the war.
Cycle. Well, not really.
Right.
I mean, but initially, yeah. Anytime you spend, Keynesian economics works until it doesn't work. In other words, excuse me, you flood the economy with money, yeah, you're going to have more production and more things being spent. But by doing that, you've set yourself up for the next round of inflation. All the inflation, I mean, Vietnam spent a ton of money, and it caused all the economic problems, you know, the Nixon-Carter era. That's how we got Reagan. You know, you look at all the massive amount, anytime you have massive amounts of spending, temporarily it's a boost. But overall, it causes far more problems. Let me read this constitutional amendment. Let me show you how simple this is. And this is my fascination and frustration with Action Radio. It says Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution shall be amended by striking Clause 2 to borrow money on the credit of the United States. So if you know Article 1, Section 8, those are the delegated powers. That's where Congress can spend money. That's where Congress, you know, is empowered to do stuff where they have, you know, all legislative responsibility from the beginning of Article 1. So you remove that sentence to borrow money on the credit of the United States. They can't borrow money on the credit of the United States. And they probably float their own little bonds or things like that, but they can't use the United States to borrow money. That is a massive change, excuse me again, of monumental proportions. Now, here's the second sentence. Section 8, Clause 1, shall be amended by adding at the end, and Congress shall have no power to borrow money on the credit of the United States. First part. Second one, nor to print money to cover expenses. That gets rid of inflation. Nor authorize the purchase or holding of securities. So they can't hold securities and borrow against it to print more money, right? Nor to authorize or permit any central bank. Well, that gets rid of the Fed. Nor to allow any control of money beyond Congress. So Congress sets the monetary policy. So in three lines, I've literally guaranteed our prosperity as a nation and eliminated the national debt in about 30 to 40 years. That's what Derek Parker, our financial person, figures. There's a solution. You want an economic solution? There it is, right there. I just wrote it a year ago, May 21st, mm-hmm. 2022. That is the easiest concept we have to understand. If you stop Congress from borrowing money, we have economic prosperity and you have deflation, which means instead of the 2 to 3% to 5% to 10% of the value of our money flowing to the Fed and to the central banks and the government, it flows back to us. If you have 5% deflation, that means our money is worth 5% more every year. That means prices can drop 5%. It's the exact opposite of inflation. Deflation is the way out of this.
So here's a question for you, because they always put the scare tactic out there immediately when they are about to increase the budget in telling the American people on every media outlet. They're saying, if we do not raise the debt ceiling, our government will shut down. That's the fear that they put out there every single time.
That's a lie.
We have a deadline. So my question to you is, if you were to try and explain to the American people on a layman's terms, what would the immediate impact be if that debt ceiling did not get raised at that moment? What would that tomorrow look like?
Well, you don't have to raise the debt ceiling. The only reason they're saying that is because they've already spent more money than the debt ceiling allows. You know, it's like if you have a $1,000 credit limit and you spend If you have a $1,000 credit limit and you spend $1,200 and you say, you have a credit limit to cover my obligations. No, you idiot. You spent $200 more than your credit limit. See, they don't allow you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So the national debt works the same way. So it's very simple. So what you say is Congress will cut spending below the debt limit and they don't have to raise it. That's how you explain it. Bianchi.
Right, but where do you cut? To explain to the American people
Congress.
That this country is not immediately going
to
shut down, where do you cut?
Let's get Jonathan. Jonathan, how many areas can you think that we could cut our budget? If we simply audited the federal government, we could probably find, you know, $1 trillion right there in fraud and duplication.
Well, I mean, okay, I have to ask, do you mean in the real world or in the media echo chamber of unreality?
Real world budget. Real, because I'm sure you've studied the actual federal budget.
I used to work in the Department of Education, including in the budgeting area of one of the things. And I would estimate that if you cut the budget by 25%, including the people, you'd never notice, except in the screaming headlines in the Washington Post.
Okay. Well, so there's a couple of things. One, there's Schedule F that Trump wants to bring in, which takes a whole lot of people out of civil service protection. That'd be a good thing. I would say that you could get rid of several departments that aren't authorized by the Constitution. The FBI, the DEA, the ATF, the Department of Education, Department of Energy, the EPA, and there's a bunch of other agencies that don't need to exist. So you could literally cut entire departments from the federal government, let the states do their job, because they already have duplicate agencies. States have an OSHA, states have an EPA, you know, states have an attorney general, states have all these things already. And they have the limited delegated power to do that, you know, and the federal government doesn't. So there's one place you could cut. You privatize Social Security, which is going to have to be done. At a certain point, you're going to say this generation of Americans is going to have, say, like Chile does. Take 10% of your money, put it in a private account, and you get it when you're 65. Okay? Everybody's going to be guaranteed a whole lot of money that way, especially if we stop Congress from borrowing. So that's the next thing you do. As far as Medicare, you know, if we stop spending all the money and stop borrowing it, the trillions of dollars, there'd be plenty of money to have some kind of guaranteed health insurance. Like school choice, you'd have health choice. So the answers are pretty simple. If you want, I'll put together a plan. In fact, that wouldn't be a bad idea. You know, that we actually write our own budget. Yeah, I wouldn't mind writing our own budget. I think we should do something like that. Jonathan, is there anything that's I'm not talking about what people want or perceive that they can't have, but is there anything that I've described that physically cannot be done because the country will collapse?
Well, that's a loaded term. The country will collapse.
Okay, well, I just made it up. I mean, I'm on live radio. I see what comes into my head. I don't think these things through. It just comes out. All right, but is there anything that's impossible? Is it impossible to privatize Social Security? Is it impossible to cut the departments that are not authorized by the Constitution and send them back to the states? Is it impossible to give the states back all their land, especially out in the West, because it's not federal land anyway? Is it impossible to do any of the things that I've talked about, to have some kind of – to stop borrowing money and then take some of the excess and have some kind of a guaranteed health choice plan for people of low income? So they don't have to die because they can't afford health insurance. There's a lot of things we could do, and that you wouldn't need Medicare then. Everybody would have some kind of thing, bring competition
before
in.
You privatize Social Security, some of the perks with Social Security need to be done away with. And all these the things are going to come to an end anyway, whether you want it or not. It's just going to come to an end.
Right.
So I was reading that the tax preparation is going to be absolute because artificial intelligence will take over that, and the IRS knows what your numbers are anyway before you walk in there sometime.
So why don't we file a return? Well, there's another great thing. We don't have to file a return. They already know the answer. They're just seeing if we're honest. Isn't that the purpose of a return now? Because they already know
they don't know what expenses you're going to try to claim, but they do know your gross revenue.
Right.
You can ask for a transcript. In fact, probably for the reasons you state, you should ask for a transcript before you file a return because they'll tell you, they already, a transcript will tell them what they know your income was. But of course it could be, you could have income that wasn't reported, by somebody, but in any event. So the point being that, I love economists thinking about some of these things because it seems like some of the greatest philosophers of society are in the economic world. There's also a lot of scoundrels. everything is fixed, meaning it can't be changed in the short run. Nothing is fixed nothing is unchangeable in the medium term, and in the long run, we're all dead. So
it's like Zero Hedge. Did you get that from Zero Hedge?
No, I got that from the University of Florida in the 1980s.
Okay.
So the thing is that in the short run, making massive changes is so difficult that it may as well be impossible. But
right.
over the medium term, there is nothing that you can't change. And
okay.
and so, you know, and then the phrase comes to mind as well that if you believe you can't do something, you're right. Now, you talk about getting rid of the federal lands. Why not sell the federal lands and retire the deficit?
Well, because the federal government doesn't own that land by constitution.
Well, I know.
It belongs to the
state. They don't think so.
They don't.
The federal lands belong to the state.
What?
And that would be the federal lands belong to the states, and the states are charging for others to use that land, whereas that money should go to the state, thus by leaving the residents of the state with these tax burdens.
Right. That's what the whole Clive and Bundy thing was all about, although nobody, mm-hmm. you know, if you read the newspaper, you wouldn't know.
But we had the attorney
agreed.
On. We had
so,
Roger Roots. We
right.
had the source.
So the thing is is that we then, of course, so anyway, so I know we were talking about global warming and this is going to destroy our economy. You know, the meme on Facebook, you know, why doesn't China care about global warming? And this older guy says, because they've already got a communist government.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
why would
That's
they care about
it.
Global warming? They're already
yeah.
communists.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so to paraphrase the economists, you say, is it possible to do something? Well, do you have a spine or don't you? You know, if you don't have if you're a squid like most Republicans, then no, you can't do it. You know, if you're a man, you could do it. You know, if you're John Wayne, you could get it done. So the thing is that we have allowed, I mean, the biggest problem with global warming is that all the people who should have stood up and said no over the last 40, 50 years, you know, just said, well, let's just, you know, this phase will pass. You know, the children, you know, my daughter has flaming purple hair, but she'll get over it, you know. And so global warming, you know, you have government. Look, the problem is that you have government reports where lower level people have admitted what isn't true, all this stuff. So they go into court. The government's already admitted it all. You can't fight it because we were appeased because this, you know, we're the same, you know, businesses, they wanted to make everybody happy. You know, the politicians wanted to make everybody happy. So they didn't fight this stuff. And then they're afraid that, you know, like, well, are you a scientist? Well, you know, so this is going to destroy our economy along with everything else.
I just had – that's fascinating, Jonathan. I just had a discussion with someone on my Facebook page. You should go to our Action Radio Environmental Action Project. So this guy comes on and wants to make a comment about how he's the interface between government and industry to reverse climate change. And I had to post it. And I don't know if you've seen it, but we've been going back and forth like crazy. And the guy says, I'm unbalanced. I don't know what I'm talking about, yada, yada. He says, are you a scientist? So, of course, I said, yes, I am. He said, well, obviously you're not because you're saying this, this, and this. I said, what are you talking about? You know, but people get that all the time, unless it's the cult of the expert. Unless you're an expert that they recognize, in other words, an expert that says that things that they want to hear, you're not an expert. You know, we have doctors who are experts in hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. I mean, Dr. Zelenko, a friend of mine, you know, he cured thousands of people, and yet he was not a recognized authority. But Dr. Fascist, who killed a million with remdesivir ventilators and everything else, he's the expert. So this cult of the expert is one of the biggest problems we have to get over. And as someone said, I think I was talking to Pianchi either yesterday or the day before, talking about, well, you know, are you an expert? Are you this or that? As often as we get. And I said, my standard line is, you know, I'm not a meteorologist, but I know when it's raining. You know, so the question is, because you don't have to have a degree in something. Well, Bonnie, you're in media. If you had to have a degree in everything that you asked a person a question of, how many degrees would you have? I'd have like 30. At least.
I'd have to have at least that many.
Yeah.
At least that many, if not 50.
So it's a bogus point. You know, I write legislation, but I'm not a lawyer. I talk about economics, and I've written a bill, you know, limiting probably one of the strongest economic bills written maybe in our history. to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. Yet I'm not an economist. Well, I have a bachelor's in it, but that's beside the point. You know, I mean, all the things that we do. So the idea of being an expert, you know, an expert is not somebody who's right. An expert is someone who has a degree that somebody else approves of. That's not a definition of an expert. Panel?
No, I agree. Well, it's kind of like, go ahead, Bianchi.
No, he's right. See, climate change is bringing new, different industry. Like, for instance, electricity is going to compete with oil. Well, a politician always, you always ask a politician, what have you done for me lately? And they say, well, I've done this. Okay, well, I would donate to you. Well, when you go out and create more donors by creating more industries and subsidizing the industry, so what will they do for you in the future, politician? I will donate to you.
Mm-hmm.
We have a bill. Let me introduce the concept of it right now. It distinguishes between free speech and commerce. So in other words, the Supreme Court said that political donations are free speech. And I would agree that if a private person gives $25, $50, $100, whatever the limit is to a campaign, so their candidate can have more access to media and things like that, that's free speech. Got no problem. However, if you're a corporation, and this bill is out there, we haven't really talked about it a whole lot. I wrote it a couple, 2 or 3 years ago. It says if you're a corporation donating to either a party or a candidate expecting a bigger return than the investment you're making in them with your so-called donation, you're engaging in commerce, and that can be regulated. That is not free speech. That is business. What do y'all think of that?
Well, that's why Burisma was wanting to buy Joe Biden so they could open up companies here in the United States without having any government what? Influence. In what way? Regulation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. A hard time to go. It's something that you can't do in their country. You got to pay somebody off. Or even they can come in and take your business, your house, and probably your kids. So that's how that stuff works. It's always that boomerang effect of the money. Money goes to Ukraine, boomerangs back around to the back door, and comes into some politician's coffers through donations, campaign contributions, which they can use any way, however they want to.
So then politics itself is a business. They're engaging in the commerce of politics. Can we use that to regulate?
Yeah, I would.
Bonnie?
I agree with that. I do believe politics has become a commerce. Should we be able to regulate them? Absolutely. We should be able to regulate it the same way that we're regulating banking transactions, because that's all that's going on. Someone's pockets are getting lined with contributions from someone else. There should be income on that should be taxed, and they should be subject to the same IRS regulations as the middle-class American is. Let's see how they like it.
You're absolutely right, Bonnie. You know how you regulate them the most obvious way? Term limits.
No, we got term limits.
Oh, absolutely.
People still have to vote. You can just trade one globalist politician for another. I would say that you have to regulate, get rid of parties before I do that, because the parties are selecting the people we vote for. We don't have an election. We have a selection based on what other people have selected for us. They've predetermined.
Right.
When's the last time? The last person that ran for office that was not pre-selected by the parties was Donald Trump. Person before that was Ronald Reagan. You know, two of our better presidents, well, Trump being best. Reagan, I'm not as big a fan. But the reason that they were so successful is because they were independent. They were not selected by the party. They were not a globalist. You look at all the globalists that are lining up for the debate versus Trump. They're all being paid by the globalists to beat on Trump. Let me get Jonathan's opinion. How much of, as we were talking about this before, how much of politics is business? How ingrained in our economy is this massive, not just the military industrial complex, but the political industrial complex? I mean, the whole federal budget really is business.
We can't say that it's supposed to be that way, but
no,
it's become that way, as Bonnie said.
Okay. Right.
I mean, it's all that. I mean, that's well, it's so many different things, but that's part of the massive resistance to Trump, which was true of the Tea Party, which is true of Ross Perot, which is true of the Reagan Revolution. It's not just about Trump. It's this feeling that the American people, especially the conservative voters, are trying to assert themselves. And the business of politics, as you're putting it, is trying to dominate. You know, we've got this huge battle between the people who think that it's their business and who the hell are we, and mm-hmm. and the people who think that, you know, voter, you know, like what did Ross Perot used to say, that, you know, and he's not the only one, is that, you know, we're the shareholders, the voters own the country. And the mm-hmm. and the corrupt politicians think no, they own it.
They truly do. Well, they get arrogant when they're in office, knowing that they can't be voted out. I mean, look at Pelosi, who's been there longer than mm-hmm. you know God created the earth. Anybody who's gotten in there and stays forever is just going to keep doing what they want to do, and it doesn't matter. Their district be damned. They do not care about the voters in their district because they know they're going to go ahead and win another term on their own terms. They're going to get it come hell or high water. So they do what they want.
And Jonathan, that's why January 6th, what they're doing is putting striking fear in the people. How dare you challenge us? How dare you do that? You don't do it again here. Mm-hmm. And people in the future are going to say, well, look what happened to them. They was put in jail. Some of them was there to rot. So they're striking fear so you don't challenge them, don't change them. And that has to be done. If not, it will be none left.
Yep.
That's fascinating. I'm letting you guys go. You're doing a great job. So, yeah. Or not. I'm checking emails. I'm checking my next guest. I'm doing like administrative stuff here, so don't mind me. Okay.
Yeah, but that's it.
I think
you know,
it is.
It's well said.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. Yeah, it's interesting. Part of this, the interesting part about this is knowing when we settled an issue. I was just looking up. I'm going to post that bill on bring it up here real quick for you guys to think about. The Campaign Speech versus Commerce Contribution Clarification Act, written December 14th of 2017. That's how far back, though. That bill is 6 years old, just to let you know. Most of the bills that I wrote were done in the first couple of years because that's when I had WBY and I had time. You know, I wasn't working a full-time job and doing a radio show like what happened afterwards. So a lot of the bills come from 2017, 2018. They're still good ideas. We just haven't really talked about them surface for a while. Bonnie, you got something else before we have our guest of honor here?
I don't have anything in depth except one of the things I did want to bring up last week because it was more pertinent date-wise range was the fact that Pee Wee Herman died, and I never got to make that point because I swear to you, Pete Buttigieg is the doppelganger for him. And when Pee Wee Herman died, I just had humorous thoughts go through my mind. Like, can you even imagine what's on his tombstone? He's probably like, here lies the doppelganger of Pete Buttigieg. Pee Wee's not really dead. He's still in office. And I just, you know, wanted your thoughts on that.
Well, let me tell you what's fascinating. First of all, Christina Bob's here, so I'm going to go right to her. But secondly, we've had the most amazing discussion of climate change, of politics, of taking away the power of Congress mm-hmm. to borrow money. And the 1 minute
yeah.
that Christina Bob calls, we're talking about Pee Wee Herman. That's
yeah. I had to bring that up.
You did. No, it's fine. That's okay. Let me get. let me reorient myself here and just do a couple of quick things here. Push a couple of buttons and introduce our guest of the day, and I'll bring her on live. And where is it? She surprised me a couple of minutes early, which is good. Here we go. Our guest of the day, Christina Bob. So I have a little bio here. Christina Bob, author of Stealing Your Vote, The Inside Story of the 2020 Election and What It Means for 2024. She's an investigative reporter, attorney, and former correspondent with One American News. Christina began her legal career in the Marine Corps, serving as a defense counsel in court-martial and administrative separation hearings. That's going to be critical because I have someone calling in about that. Served in multiple tours, including Afghanistan and Germany. Also, after military service, positions in the Department of Homeland Security, and currently serves as attorney for President Donald J. Trump. Let's welcome back to the show for the second time, Christina Bob. How you doing?
Hey, thank you. Great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We love having you on the show, so let's give you a round of applause. And so I've sent you the link to the show, so you'll be able to check this amazing discussion we had. We'll get back to Pee Wee Herman another day, but I've got so much to ask you. So
I was
start with
nervous,
the main...
honestly. I heard you talking about Pee Wee Herman, and I was like, oh, my gosh, I have nothing to add. I don't know if we should have said it.
Well, like I said, if there's anything you want to talk about, it's fair game here on the show, and I've got a few things to add as well. We can go back to that. First things first, though, tell me about the book. What's going on? And my big question, can you stop the steal again? That's really what we're all concerned about. So where's the book now? What's happening and what's going on?
Yeah, so the book's out. It's been out for a few months now. Stealing Your Vote, The Inside Story of the 2020 Election, What It Means for 2024. It's funny, you know, when I put it out, I had no idea when or if Jack Smith was going to indict on January 6th. And I certainly didn't know an indictment was going to be the four counts that it was with the facts that it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of crazy. I read through the indictment and thought, oh my gosh, my book is the answer to all of this. So you know, it was kind of fun to realize I think I was ahead of the game a little bit, but notwithstanding,
that's a good thing.
I don't think that this January 6th case or any of them really are about justice or getting to the truth. I think it's about trying to stop their political opponent. So, we've got facts and evidence and all that, but I think the game is probably going to be slightly different, but certainly everything in Stealing Your Vote is front and center in the indictment.
Do facts and evidence matter, or is it really, you know, if they want to put Donald Trump in jail, obviously, but even if they cost mm-hmm. him a ton of money, what is it, $40, $50 million so far?
Yeah.
You know, and
lot.
Time away
yeah.
from rallies, it's like anything yeah. they can do to make your life miserable, they're going to do.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I don't think their goal is to put him in jail. I mean, you know, they're not going to lose sleep if they do. I think their goal is to keep him out of the White House.
Okay.
And if they do put him in jail, I think that gets overturned like immediately. So I'm less concerned about him having any jail time and more concerned about the 2020 election. And to your earlier question, can we stop this deal for 2024? Yes, we mm-hmm. can, which is why they're doing this. If they had it rigged so tightly and so perfectly that
mm-hmm.
we didn't stand a chance, they wouldn't be doing all of this. Because they'd want it to look legitimate. They wouldn't want to,
okay.
you know, out themselves as the Marxists that they are. So, yeah, we can. And we, I think, are doing great work through so many great Americans around the country that have stepped up to become part of the solution. So, yes, and I think the biggest hurdle to that is getting the president successfully through these cases.
Yeah, because we can't wait. There's so many things that I would love to see happen in the next 4 years.
Yeah.
To me, it's a historic opportunity. We're not talking about, mm-hmm. you know, just different policy changes. This is like a once in every 100 years, you know, once in a lifetime opportunity. This would be a time where we could take care of the Fed. We could, you know, get out of the,
mm-hmm.
the United Nations. We could do some amazing things. I'll talk to you about more about that later. I want to get onto this this trial just for a bit, too, and see what the latest strategies are. Something I wrote down right before the show. I wrote, the key for the deep state is maintaining the fantasy that Brandon won the 2020 election. Anything or anyone mm-hmm. who challenges that fantasy challenges the entire coup and therefore is a threat that must be destroyed. But there's one Achilles heel, and this is the Trump electors. Now, we talked about this the last time you were here, the seven battleground states. They're still out there, and they're
mm-hmm.
trying to arrest them. Do you know any
yeah.
further evidence on what's going on with the Trump electors?
Well, nothing that the electors did was illegal. Not only is it not illegal, it has been done in American history before. So I think that's part of the reason why Jack Smith didn't bring the charges. You know, it's one thing to charge a political opponent who's as polarizing as Donald Trump is. It's another to bring mm-hmm. in the plumbers and the school teachers and everybody who, you know, they've done that a lot for the January 6th protesters, but those trials weren't front and center. Those trials were not what a Donald Trump trial was going to be, right? So
mm-hmm.
I think they're trying to focus this solely on Donald Trump, jam this show trial through, pretend it's legitimate, and hope they can get a conviction and hope they can ruin his presidential race. They're not going to be able to do that. Even if they did get a conviction, even if they did put him in jail, which, again, I don't think would happen or certainly wouldn't last for a particularly long time.
Mm-hmm.
They're just hoping that they can derail his campaign. And quite honestly, if they do that, I think it just accelerates it. I think he wins all 50 states if they do that. You know, I mean, it's not the kind of country that anybody wants to live in. The only people who are okay with what's happening right now are the insane lunatics that don't know the difference between a man and a woman and have severe Trump derangement syndrome.
I love having you on the show. Just say it like it is. It's really, most of us kind of do that anyway, but it's really, it's great to hear.
Thank you.
For defense, though, and we've been talking about this on the show, I'm going to introduce you to a couple of folks in a minute. One of them, Jonathan Mosley, who does our legal report, who's actually defending January 6 people. But as a defense, I got some surprises for you. This is going to be fun. But as defense, okay, good. can Donald Trump and can you include all the evidence of the stolen election into the defense? Because it seems like they're saying,
yeah.
You know, he knew it wasn't stolen, and he's saying it is stolen, so that's fraud. But doesn't that open the door to you bringing in literally everything that we've learned about?
Yeah, it does. And it's interesting because the way they pled it in the indictment is they don't even limit the time frame of knowledge about the election to – November 3rd, the time frame between November 3rd and January 6th, they go into the Arizona audit, they go into 2000 mules, they go into the Michigan Senate hearing. All of that took place in 2021, like into 2021. So, okay, then let's talk about all of that. So, yes, in a normal legal setting, yes, that opens the door to everything. We should be able to put on all of the evidence that we were aware of at the time and refute the evidence in the indictment or refute the accusations in the indictment with evidence that have come out since January 6, 2021. I suspect that Jack Smith is going to try to exclude a lot of the evidence, saying something to the effect of, these cases were all brought in civil litigation, and so none of this evidence should be considered. So they're going to, I think they'll try to play games with the evidence, but there's a very big difference between a criminal trial and a civil trial and the right of the accused to put on a defense. So if they do try to exclude that evidence, obviously that's just one more issue on appeal. Jack Smith knows this is not going to be upheld on appeal. Nothing about this is legitimate. He knows it's going to get overturned. He doesn't care. They're playing the short game knowing they're going to lose the long game, but they hope that in the process of winning the short game, they can get Donald Trump out of the presidential race, keep him out of the White House. That's all they're trying to do. So, that's what we're fighting, right?
All right, hold on, everybody. I want to introduce you individually here, so just mute yourselves for a bit. I'm going to bring in Jonathan Mosley. So Jonathan's our legal reporter. He's actually defended January 6th folks. Jonathan, what's really going on now in the trenches with the defense of the folks? Go ahead.
Well, the main thing is the D.C. courts, the D.C. jury, the D.C. Federal judges. So, most of this, as I described, is like the earth went through a tear in the universe and we're in an alternate universe. You mentioned in a normal legal setting. And, of course, unfortunately, we're not getting that. I would also comment that the governing rule in the D.C. courts with January 6th is hypocrisy. It's like rule one of is we shall be hypocrites about the rules. But the thing is that when they say no, you can't bring that in, I'm hoping that that will be as obvious to the American people. Oh, wait a minute,
exactly.
You told us there wasn't any evidence, and now you're not going to let us see the evidence.
Right. I that's my hope as well, because we have mountains of evidence that there were problems with the election. And more keep coming out. I don't know if you saw the Gateway Pundit report that just came out. I talked to Jim Hoff about it a day or two ago, where there were police reports filed in October of 2020. The police went and searched the premises that was reported of being an illegal ballot printing scheme. They went, they have the evidence, they gathered it, they wrote up the report, and then did nothing with it. And Gateway Pundit just obtained those police reports this week. So, and there were thousands and thousands of ballots, according to the police report, according to this Gateway Pundit report. So every day that goes by, we're only getting more and more evidence that there were problems with the 2020 election. But I think Ms. Mosley is exactly right that we need the American people to see it, which is another thing. I'd love to have cameras in the courtroom. Let's let the American people see this.
Is the Trump campaign interested in getting involved directly, or can you get involved in helping the January 6th defendants? Because to us, they're political prisoners. There's no reason for this.
I don't know, honestly. I'm with Save America at this point, so I don't know what the campaign is going to do. But, President Trump has been very vocal about his opinion with the January 6th prisoners. And yes, it's something that we all personally care very much about. I agree with your assessment that they're political prisoners, that they've been treated unfairly and all of that. But, as he said, we're in a tear in the universe and we're in an alternate universe at the moment. So from my perspective, one of the best things we can do to help the January 6th prisoners is to get Donald Trump back in office. Let's set the world right side up again and take care of this.
Something else, too, I'd like to see if the Republican donors could work with the January 6th lawyers. Jonathan, isn't one of your biggest problems money, just defending these people?
Oh, absolutely. Anybody who could just, like, retweet, pick your favorite legal defense fund, whatever you like, and just if people would just retweet. A while ago, like a year ago, Steve Bannon said that they'd raised $100 million, and we're like, you know, our jaws hanging. So why would anyone give when – but that's not true. We're – you know, people would make more money at the McDonald's than what the attorneys are able to eke out. And, I mean, these were people who weren't wealthy to begin with in most cases. And now their jobs have been devastated. So, you know, I don't want to say somebody you have to give to this legal defense fund or that one, but anything anybody can do would make a huge difference. And we think we could have beat this back before it got to this point. But, of course, here we are.
Yeah. And, of course, Christina, you're welcome to talk to any of our folks here off the air and follow up with that. I have another surprise for you. And this is a friend of mine who I've got, you know, I think you're really going to enjoy our show today. This is my friend Catherine Arnett. Catherine Arnett is a fellow Marine. She's been, I think, court-martialed twice for refusing the COVID jab, has been in jail, and I think is facing another prison term. I'm not sure the details. Catherine, why don't you introduce yourself to Christina Bob? Welcome to the show again.
Hi, Greg. Good to be back. Hi, Christina. Pleasure to meet you. This is Catherine.
Hey. Yeah, it's a pleasure to meet you. I'm so sorry for your story. I believe it. Thank you for standing up for what you believe in.
Absolutely. All by the grace of God. I look back at it and I'm like, yep, God was carrying me through that. So I'm looking at a federal trespassing charge and court coming up here in two-ish weeks, a little under 2 weeks, and potentially 6-month jail max for it, $500 fine. That's what the latest with the Marine Corps and my story is.
Or is that a separate J6 issue?
No, ma'am. No January 6th.
Okay. That's a federal trespassing with the Marine Corps.
It was,
what are they claiming you trespassed on?
So, basically, long story short, what happened, they got me on a bunch of trumped up charges in January of this year, right? January 23rd of this year. They put me in the brig. I was stationed out in Japan, and they put me in the military prison out in Japan. And then on April 19th of this year, they flew me in military police custody from Okinawa to California, had me sit in the brig in San Diego, Miramar for another month. Then they released me on May 15th, and then they pulled the court-martial charges on June 5th and instead opted to administratively separate me because I was then in the States and they could justify putting me out on the streets because they can't do that in the foreign countries per SOPA status, right?
Right.
So on June 23rd.
And this is all because you refused the COVID jab?
Yes, absolutely. It's all inextricably linked because I beat their first court-martial and got it withdrawn, and they were pissed about that, of course. And so they were like, oh, we're going to get her on the back end somehow. You know, she stood up for herself. She can't do that. So basically I refused the vaccine, and I also refused to separate from active duty whenever they told me to separate for not getting the vaccine, solely for not getting the vaccine. So mine was kind of a double whammy because I refused to separate. I didn't see those orders as lawful either because, you know, they stem from retaliation for not getting the vaccine.
Right.
Long story short, they had me stateside and they gave me my end of active service to be June 23rd at 23:59 on West Coast time. And, you know, I was telling everybody knew how I was going to approach this. I'm like, look, I'm not willingly separating from active duty. Like, what's going to happen when, you know, I turn myself in to the military police station on base? And they're like, well, we'll give you a federal trespassing charge. So I made it easy. I'm just like, look, I'm not going to make anyone, like, hunt for me or anything. I'm here. So at midnight on the 24th, I'm like, look, I'm here. I'm not willingly separating. And I had also written some paperwork to the commanding officers on the Miramar base. I'm like, look, mm-hmm. I don't have any due process. I'm seeking asylum here in San Diego until, you know, things can be resolved, until an injunction, you know, can. And I knew that it wouldn't happen, but it's the fact that I submitted the paperwork, the paper trail, right? So at 4 a.m., they give me the trespassing charge, fingerprint me, put me in handcuffs in the back of the cop car, and they just dump me at a gas station like a mile from the base. So
are you serious? Finally, they didn't even, like, have you find someone out in town that you could go stay with?
No. They're just like, all right, here's your trespassing charge. Get in the car.
What?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's
great.
That
is bananas. I've never heard anything like that.
Yeah, it's
That's
not.
How
no, they wanted to be done. Yeah, they wanted to be done with me and just sweep me. They wanted to sweep me under the rug because, you know, I just did an interview with LifeSite Catholic News the other day, and it just came out yesterday. So I'm still speaking out about the abuse that they put myself and other service members through. So.
Since you have this pending charge, do you still have, like, your appointed counsel?
No, so technically, since, you know, they said your end of active service date is June 23rd, on paper to the Marine Corps, I'm no longer in. All right, I obviously don't agree with that.
So then how do they have jurisdiction to continue to prosecute you?
So they put me under federal jurisdiction. That was a federal trespassing charge. It's not a UCMJ charge. Yeah.
Okay, so you're in federal court now, federal criminal court.
Yes, that's correct. It's going to be downtown San Diego. I think there was some acronym that I can't recall off the top of my head, ma'am, but maybe some uniformed presence will be there because it was on a military base. I can't totally quote them on that, but from what I was understanding, something like that may
but it is a federal charge.
Hey, Catherine, let me just hold a little bit because if you two want to talk off the air, we can do this. We only have Christina for a limited time.
Yeah, for sure.
And I want to let you expand on this story. But Christina, in general terms, there are military people. I mean, Catherine doesn't want to leave the military. She still wants to serve her country. We get a lot of folks who are forced out. We've got a lot of health problems with pilots. We have folks all the time. You know, we have a lot of military in this area that call in. So where do we go from here? How do we fix this mandate that never should have happened? The people that are separated, can we bring them back? Can they get legal representation, you know, for someone like Catherine?
The answer, I don't want to sound like a campaign poster, but the answer is Donald Trump. I mean, he has said he believes in reinstating everybody that was wrongfully discharged. And he has heard many stories like Catherine's. I mean, he gets people calling him all the time saying, you know, I don't want to leave the military. I didn't want to get the COVID vaccine, all of that. So I think there's so much at stake in this 2024 election, which is why they're doing what they're doing. They're pulling out all the stops. But I think it gets corrected with Trump in office. I hope so. I mean, the trajectory that we're on is not good.
You know, and here's my problem, too, is that you've got the deep state, both Democrats and Republicans, lining up against two people, against Donald Trump and against Robert Kennedy.
Yeah.
Those are the two. Yeah. I got an idea for you for this first debate. The question is, should Donald Trump debate? What if you, and it might even be you, you know, on One American News, held a discussion with Robert Kennedy and Donald Trump as the non-deep state candidates at the same time as that Republican debate is being held? What do you think?
Oh, I think it would be great. I think it would be awesome. I think Robert F. Kennedy is the only true Democrat in the Democrat primaries. He's the only non-administrative state, deep state, you know, establishment person in the Democrat Party, which is funny to me. He's a Kennedy. Like, his name is Kennedy. He's RFK Jr. And they're like, oh, he's not a real Democrat. I don't think that's true.
That's
I think you
fly,
all
yeah.
left the Democrat Party, not the other way around.
Yeah. Could you see him in a Trump administration as heading Health and Human Services, for example, cleaning up the CDC, the FDA, the NIH, that whole bunch?
I have not talked to the president about this, but just my own personal thoughts. I would love to see him as the director of the CIA and let him clean house there. I mean, they killed his father and his uncle. Let him clean it up. Like, if anybody's going to care about making sure that give it to him. So that's just my own, you know, daydream. But I mean, everything, I've got his book. I haven't finished reading it yet, but his COVID book on Fauci, I mean, goodness, he could be a special prosecutor on the COVID crime. You know, like there's so many places I think he would fit in into a Trump administration.
That's fascinating because I have friends like Dr. Judy Mikovits. Robert Kennedy wrote the foreword to her book, Plandemic. So I could get you all connected mm-hmm. real fast. So that would not be a problem.
Yeah, that's great.
We were tossing around, and if you have something you want to bring up, please let me know. And I don't know how much time you have, but I want to get one last thing. And we kind of were kicking around an idea earlier this week. It started off as a joke, but the more I think about it, the more this might be interesting, of having Donald Trump and the January 6th folks apply for political asylum in the United States from the U.S. occupation coup government.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea, and unfortunately, the hypothesis makes sense because of all of the political persecution. I don't think in practical purposes it wouldn't be anything more than making a statement, right?
Good point at a rally. Okay. I want to go around our panel a little bit, but I've got one bill to talk about here. And I sort of joked around that you were here to bring all our bills back to Donald Trump. I was having a little fun.
Yeah.
But we have one on the constitutional amendment to take away the power of Congress to borrow money. That would be earth-shattering. That would be world news in about 5 seconds if you announced it. I don't know if you had a chance to take a look. I mean, obviously, you know, I know you're really busy. But mm-hmm. would you even consider maybe presenting that to President Trump? And what do you think? I know economics is not your specialty, but
right.
if we stop Congress borrowing money.
Advisor.
Yeah, it's okay. Well, you know, I mean, we do a lot of things here. But that kind
well,
of thing,
think,
people
you know,
would rally around it, I think.
Well, I think we need a lot of creative solutions. I don't think we can continue to do government the way we've been doing them. So mm-hmm. I'm very open to new, I don't want to say radical because then I'll get accused of saying something radical, but more out of the box solutions to problems. I think that's appropriate. I think we need it in this time. So you know, I can't really opine on economics because that's not my area of expertise, but I mm-hmm. like the out of the box thinking. I think that's appropriate. I think that's the way you come to a good solution, you know, is thinking of things that we haven't done before.
That's what the show is dedicated to, you know, and this is why I'm hoping that we can connect with the 2024 campaign and provide legislation that y'all might consider running on. You know, this is and that's one of the big bills right there. Anything you want to bring up? I don't know how much time you have because I think you said like 20 minutes. That's what they told me.
Yeah,
I've
got
you
know. Like a couple minutes left. But
okay.
I just thank you for what you guys are doing on your show. I mean, free speech and speaking your mind and having, you know, a place where the community can discuss these things openly, I think is really, really important. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about Stealing Your Vote, the book that I wrote that I had no idea was going to be so appropriately, you know, counter to this indictment. I hope people can check it out if you want to know what happened.
Where do we get it? Where do we get it?
You can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, you know, wherever books are sold. Not too hard to find. But,
okay.
but yeah, no, I'm just really grateful for your platform and for the work that you guys are doing and how dedicated you are to the truth.
Well, we're available to help, so let us help you. Anything we do, any legislation we can supply, you know, we are the ideas factory, as Matt Gaetz calls us, and I'm in Matt's district. So please feel free to call on us anytime. And it's been great to have you
I
on.
I love it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, too. Take care, Christina.
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye now. Wow. I just love having her on. It's so much fun. Panel discussion, you know, let's, you want to recap anybody? Bonnie had to leave us now. We got Pianchi, Jonathan and Catherine. Impressions, I don't even want to take a break. I want to just go fresh right into this. That was fascinating. A lot of information, a lot of goodwill. I think a lot of stuff got accomplished. And Jonathan and Catherine, I think you might be able to contact her. I'll ask Christina, you know, in a bit if you guys can get in touch and see what kind of work you can do with her. Let's just start with Catherine. What do you think so far? Encouraged?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for connecting us, Greg.
Oh, it's my job. It's kind of I kind of like doing it too. I love doing good work like this. It's a, you know, so many jobs are boring, and you can't, you know, you don't see your accomplishments. You put papers from one pile into another. Here we actually, you know, we touch lives. You know, we make connections. And although we're not huge, although we're censored unbelievably, you know, we just talked to Trump's attorney and one of his senior advisors, you know, for 20 minutes. How often does that happen? How does that happen? You know, we got friends. We got, you know, there's, you know, everybody's behind us, including God, you know, and so there's a lot of things going into the show that are not, this is not a regular place. This is not a standard, you know, news reporting service. We're actually breaking ground. We're writing legislation. You know, if Christina takes that to Trump, that we have a bill, that will take away the power of Congress to borrow money. And he decides to use that in the campaign. That's huge. That is historical, you know, in, you know, change. And that's the kind of thing we're talking about. Jonathan, what do you think? Let's wake him up again. Unmute.
About what? I mean, it's,
about what?
I'm very encouraged.
I don't know.
She's
the weather.
Her book. She's, not, yeah. She's obviously on the right page. I don't know how many attorneys swirling around Trump are in the same mindset as she is.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they need to file some severe. I'm just debating with an idiot on Breitbart's comments right now.
Invite him on the show.
Well, so the idea that there's like these all these indictments. There's something called the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, which is created by, well, it's the Congress has the authority, which of course, Congress being Congress, they wanted to like get all the glory and not do any work or take any responsibility, like in Yes, Prime Minister. So they delegated the rules to the Supreme Court, which even though Congress clearly give, I mean, the Constitution clearly gives the duty to Congress. They punt it because that's what they do. So Rule 12 of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure are various motions that are allowed to challenge or strike down an indictment. Then you have the whole political world thinking, in the left wing, thinking that, oh, it's an indictment. You should read the indictment. It's devastating. No, there's no evidence in the indictment. I mean, it's just like the indictment is like, I mean, like people say that, you know, some candidate did X, Y, Z because his ex-wife in their divorce proceeding accused it. Are you kidding me? nobody has ever exaggerated in a divorce case.
Oh, no.
So they have all these indictments and everybody's like, oh, my God, we read the indictment. Trump is guilty of this, that, and the other thing. No, it's an accusation. And the point I'm making is that even the rules allow indictments to be struck. If indictments were sacrosanct, if indictments were evidence, if they were always truthful, why do they have a whole rule of like 20 different ways to strike down an indictment in the rules of the court? The court's own rules say – You can strike an indictment for this reason or that reason or another reason or what have you, because, you know, just because it's an indictment doesn't mean it's true.
Bianchi, let's get you in the conversation. Bianchi?
Well, let me finish what I was going to say.
Okay. All right, hold on.
I don't know if Christina Bob's sympathetic comments are going to translate into these mostly, I mean, I love her. I love Alina Habba. Two or three other people, but most of these lawyers around Trump, I think, are, you know, a bunch of dead weight. They're bumps on a log. And are they actually going to file these motions?
That's a good question.
I doubt it.
We're going to see what happens. We're going to watch what goes on. I have a lot of faith in Christina Bob. I've watched her on One American News as a reporter. You know, she's been on the show twice. Catherine's left us, but I wanted to follow up with Catherine. She was asking some good questions. I mean, her specialty, that when I read this in the bio, and I didn't see it until I read it this morning, you know, when I posted about her handling court martials and administrative separation hearings. That's her specialty in the Marines. That's why I wanted to get her connected with Catherine. You know,
well,
and so,
what I'm saying is, yeah. Here's another way of saying what I'm saying before Bianchi takes over.
Okay. takes over.
If Christina Bob were in charge,
right,
I would feel 1,000 times better.
Okay.
If the entire Trump legal team were up to her to decide, I'd breathe a sigh of relief.
Yeah, I don't know where she stands in the hierarchy. I know it's pretty high, but she's the public face of a lot of it, as is that other attorney who you mentioned, who I'm not as familiar with, but. No, I think a lot of interesting things happen. I'm going to give her a little follow-up. I think she liked the idea of Trump and Robert Kennedy having a discussion on One American News during the time that the Republican donor class folks are debating. Was Trump not there? Nobody would watch their debate. I mean, this is a double blow. This is a blow to them, and it's a blow to the deep state to have Trump and Kennedy, the two most prominent in their party that are non-deep state, having a chat, you know, during a nothing Republican globalist beat session. I think that'd be fascinating. I just thought of that about an hour before the show. That was a new one. Anyway, let's get to Pianki. Pianki, I wanted to let you ask a question. That's why I did that time check. But when Christina said she only had a couple of minutes left, I knew that wasn't really going to be possible. But if you have follow-ups, you know, let's discuss them. And I can always get her, you know, a question if you have it. And we'll see what happens. Pianki, what did you think? Pretty interesting, huh? I was
impressed. Well, they're on target to do what they do. But as anything, one thing that really disturbed me is mm-hmm. that there's no young people that's being groomed. Now, you have Brianna on your show.
So well, you I asked her to call in this morning. I would have introduced her. She didn't call in, so I don't know what happened. I was going to introduce her to
Christina. Well, you do have her on show.
Yeah, I do.
You do have her on your show. But uh-huh. the thing is that when you see all these groups, these movements, other than something that's contrived by the left, you don't see any young people. Especially on the conservative side, they're sitting down. You got your O'Connells, you got what looks like a bingo convention, but you got to have young people. So you're sitting up with me, Jonathan. We're not going to be around forever.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Amber might be coming back. I've been talking to her off the air too, so hopefully she'll come back on. But I'm always encouraging younger folks to come on. You know, what's interesting. The guys don't want to do it. Most of the younger folks that I have are women. I find that interesting too. So I'm wondering if there's a difference if the guys have been, you know, demasculated to the point where they don't seem to have opinions anymore. They're not the guys that they used to be, you know, like our generation. We don't mind fighting back. You know, even me, the nerd warrior.
Well, you know, one of the things that was an argument was corporate and big tech, what? Censorship. What does that mean? They don't want you to talk about it. They don't want you to hear it. Well, should mm-hmm. they not tell you something? Mm-hmm. Put this information into your young people, the younger the better, starting off at 3 years old. And at some point in time, they won't be able to bamboozle people into plain old ignorance like of what actually is going on. People are ignorant. They don't know.
Well, most of it comes to the government schools. You know, you take parents that basically create Americans out of their children until they're about five. Then they go to government school where they turn into communists. And then at 18, they come back out again from high school, and we have to try and turn them back into Americans again. You know, we need to bypass that middle step. We need to stop the communist conversion and just get rid of government schools and just have, you know, have parents pick a different, or like Arizona, the universal school choice. You get what we've been calling for years. You know, you get a voucher and you take the money where you want. It's up to you. If you want to go to government school, great. If not, you know, go where you want.
Well, one thing it would do, it would do away or cripple a major weapon of the left, and that's the teachers union.
There's a way around that too. Let me get Jonathan back here, because it's something I discovered about 4 or 5 months ago, is that the only reason we have federal unions, including teachers unions, was an executive order by John Kennedy. So all Trump has to do is reverse that executive order, and there are no more federal unions. Jonathan, do you know anything about that? Oh, he's playing with the Breitbart person. he's distracted.
No, I don't. I'm not familiar. No, I'm not familiar with that. That would be.
It's an executive order. Yeah, I've got it in my long list in my files. It's an executive order that John Kennedy created federal unions, federal employee unions. It's not a law.
Oh, right.
So
well,
Trump
I think
has
Congress
to do.
I don't know if Congress has legislated on that topic as well. Or since then, or whatever. But I know probably nothing would cause scream. When I worked for the Department of Education and Reagan's policies were trying to change it, they would run up the hill and get the Democrats to scream bloody murder every time they wanted to, you know, to reform something. They actually got, you know, we were going to try to, like the library in the Department of Education could be contracted out. It didn't have to be done by government employees. They actually went up and got a Democrat Party, you know, writer in a bill to block us from doing that. So, you know, it would really nothing would cause more screaming and hysteria and gnashing of teeth in the Democrats than anything touching on unions. But yeah, it could be, you know, it should be done.
Well, here it is. I've got this FLRA, Federal Labor Relations Authority. 50th anniversary of Executive Order 10988, which says 50 years ago, January 17th, 1962, so this would have been, I guess, 22, or whatever, federal employees first obtained the right to engage in collective bargaining through labor organizations when President John F. Kennedy issued Executive Order 10988, Employee Management Cooperation in the Federal Sector. Now, I don't see anything about a law in here. It just says the executive order. So if that executive order is repealed, would that, in fact, dissolve the teachers, the SAU, all those other federal unions?
Well, I'm just saying, I don't know if they, since then they passed other statutes, but it's worth a try. I mean,
oh, looks like
one of the problems.
Yeah,
one of the problems is that some of these laws are over, some of these legal authorities are overlapping. So if there's a law and an executive order and you delete the executive order, yeah, it helps. No question.
Hmm. Yeah, I have to do more research on this because we talk about a Civil Service Reform Act, October 13th, 1978. Congress finds that, is it a resolution or what is it? The Udall substitute, Title VII, Federal Service Labor Management Relations Statute. Well, we can look it up. But it looks like Congress did take some action. I don't have time to research it right now. But if the executive order underlying that congressional action, like you say, the law would still stand, but it wouldn't have as much to stand on, would it? Maybe necessarily. I don't know if you looked into it or not. If you haven't, then I don't know. But I just find it fascinating that they were created by executive order. That doesn't sound like something a president could do.
Well, a teachers union is not created by executive order. Teachers unions are local. But if you don't have no students, you won't need teachers. If you don't have teachers, then they won't be paying into a teachers union.
Well, the local unions are the local unions part of the national, like the NEA, the National Education Association?
No,
that is a national union, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but they still, the teachers are local. They're not federal.
Well, I know, but the federal part of it could be dissolved. Now, the local teachers unions want to set up shop. That's fine. I don't care. You know, they wouldn't have the power of the NEA to lobby Congress. Jonathan, help me out here. The Department of Education, how much influence did
you have the American Federation of Teachers too, which is a teachers union.
Okay. Well, let's ask from the Department of Education point of view. How much effect did those people have? And if we got rid of the federal union, education union offices in Washington, how much difference would that make?
Well, like much of things in politics and government, technically they don't. But like Dr. Fauci picking up the phone to other countries and saying, you don't want to do hydroxychloroquine, do you? In reality, they influence a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
The authorizing act for the Department of Education emphasizes that it is a local issue. It's a state and local issue, that there shall be no federal curriculum. But in reality, they influence people when they pull everybody together for conferences or they hand out the money.
Mm-hmm.
To willing people, they end up having a tremendous amount of influence, but not on the book. Let me say it's off the books more than it is on the books.
Hmm.
if you got rid of the Department of Education, you would not make a big change to the law, but you would it'd be like having, a nest of cockroaches in your house. You'd get rid of them out of there causing lots
of trouble. So where would the National Teachers Unions go without a Department of Education? They'd have to lobby other branches.
Well, they are local. I mean, they are state unions, which then, engage in a national confederation. And the problem is that labor union law does, provide some backup for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, the federal law needs to go away, but the unions are not established by federal law, like you say. They're just the right to bargain collectively is generically backed up by federal law. and things like that. But remember,
but government unions are different, though. Government unions are different because they're not bargaining with a finite amount of money with a corporation. They're bargaining with taxpayer money, and the government. And so this is why I don't like government unions. I have no problem with unions. I was a Teamster for years. I have no problem with the unions. My problem is where
the
government
Federation.
Go ahead.
Teachers union was formed back in the early 1900s. So, no, see, the thing is that it's not that you want to eliminate them. You just want to give parents the choice to take their kids out of those failing systems. Thus, if the system is going to fertile. You see, as long as you got children there and there's no accountability, in other words, you're there, but you're not gaining anything from it, and you're still paying for it, and then the money trail begins. But you have to,
right.
You have to kill it by removing, right. Letting the kids go.
Yeah. So, but remember, if you got rid of the teachers' unions, children would die. You know, all the children would commit suicide. they couldn't. You know, the children would. You know, they'd want to ask the teachers, "Why is your hair pink?" And the teacher has to be able to set the lesson plan for the day aside and talk about their gay lover, or else the teachers, will, you know, the students will commit to it.
That's our Pee Wee Herman chat. Yeah. I'll have to get by on that next week. That was actually really funny because Christina joined the show exactly when she started talking about Pee Wee Herman. And we just had this fascinating discussion about all this other stuff. I mean, it's amazing how all this works sometimes. We've only got
so
about
Christina
20 minutes
left. Felt she was not prepared for the discussion.
She was not. Well, she's got a good sense of humor. That's what I like having her on. I mean, she's got this incredibly important position, and yet she's just like a regular person. So she's really great to talk to. But as always, there were several things that I had just in case she had longer, but we didn't get a chance to get to. And one of those I want to discuss, Vivek, as I'm calling him, Obamaswamy, who is, I think, the most dangerous person in the campaign right now, because he's the new Obama. He's the young, you know, not quite, you know, black enough. who's articulate and what did Joe Biden say? Clean, you know, and he looks very professional, very polished, says all the right things. He's got all those cliches down. He's well rehearsed. He's been groomed, you know, for politics, not for, you know, not the other sense of the word grooming, but there's something wrong with him. And so I looked him up and I'm trying to figure out how he earned $600 million when he hasn't seemed to have invented anything. And I looked up his patents on Justia. And so he's part of a group that has two patents, both concerning traffic management and like Uber car tracking, GPS stuff. And I'm thinking, I knew he didn't do that because he's not an electrical engineer or computer engineer. He's a biotech guy with a basic bachelor's degree, and he's got a Yale law degree, which he doesn't seem to have used. But how do you make $600 million when you haven't really invented anything or patented anything? Something's wrong here. This guy's wrong. Panel? Any opinion one way or the other?
That's what you call a yellow dog contract.
Okay.
But that's another discussion.
Well, the yellow dog Democrat was the old thing where people would rather vote for a yellow dog than a Democrat or something or whatever, however that worked.
No, I mean, you'd vote contract. For a yellow dog if he had a D by his name.
Oh,
yellow
okay.
dog contracts was that if we hire you, you got to join the union. That was the stuff went on with the teachers. But no, okay. That's just those things have to be broken up because it has gotten completely out of control.
Yeah. I'm just looking for more stuff. I'm looking for my Obama Swami patent. Oh, here we go. Here is patents. You ready? Oh, go ahead, Jonathan, and I'll get to.
Well, I mean, I just, you know, trust but verify. I don't know what kind of, if he's a politician, you know, there's a 99% chance that he's lying and just because he's a politician and he's a big phony. But, you know, I mean, like, you know, that we weren't born yesterday, but I don't know anything about him in particular. And
okay.
He sounds great.
Well, that's
here's the other
he,
thing
he,
about.
He sounds too good.
About
that's why I'm worried.
Yeah, but here's the thing about people, politicians, Republicans, who make really strong statements.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ones that want to get along with the moderates and they want to fool the rubes into pushing the Republican Party to the left, they typically don't go way out on a limb. Like on abortion, if somebody says, you know, I believe in pro-life, no exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, well, I don't care if, you know, if he gets in office and he votes for exceptions, I'm not too worried about it. But somebody who says, who's willing to take a very unpopular stand,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's probably serious. He's probably not just, you know, he wouldn't subject himself
to ridicule if he's just a phony. Is my way of looking at.
No, he's a very good phony, but I'd love to get him on the show. Excuse me. Especially what first alerted me that there was a problem was when he talked about if he's going to be president, he's going to pardon Donald Trump. And I said, you've just said Donald Trump is guilty of all the crimes he's accused of, because you don't pardon people who are innocent. And so I'm immediately suspect that his job was to plant in people's minds that Donald Trump is guilty, but also to win favor with Republicans, because even if he is guilty, he's going to get pardoned by, you know, Obama Swami. That just seemed wrong to me. I mean, what he should have said was, Trump's not guilty of these things. This is ridiculous. It's a bogus prosecution, like Christina Bob was saying, that they're just trying to stop him from you know, being on the ballot, from being in the election. So he came at it wrong from what I would expect a Republican to do. That's why I was curious.
I don't know, because most Republicans, you know, would be happy to, you know, to hang Donald Trump. You know, again, if it would get them a favorable mention in the Washington Post.
So what do you think of the idea of Donald Trump and Robert Kennedy sitting down for a discussion during the alleged deep state Republican donor debate? I think she liked that idea. I love that idea. I just had that before the show.
I don't understand. What debate?
Okay. So there is a debate that is scheduled. I think it's coming up fairly soon, actually.
Okay.
The first Republican debate. First Republican presidential debate of the 2024 season, all right? And so all the deep state donor candidates are going to be there, you know, from Chris Christie, Ron DeSanctimonious, and Nikki Haley, and all the deep state goobers. They're all going to be there. And they want Donald Trump to be there. And so what I'm saying is, instead of Donald Trump going to that debate, he should do a thing on One American News, and Christina could arrange that. She's a former reporter from there, and I'm also in touch with Neil McCabe, so I could, you know, I'll probably contact him too. But the idea is that during that debate, to sandbag them, you know, Trump not only doesn't debate on their debate, but he talks to Robert Kennedy as the two non-deep state candidates, because the Democrats hate Robert Kennedy as much as the Republicans hate Donald Trump. And fortunately, I have contacts in both parties because of Dr. Judy Mikovits, who's a friend of Robert Kennedy, and Christina Bobb and Peter Navarro, who've been on the show, who are part of the Trump campaign. So I'm actually working with both in a way. It's kind of interesting. But I find them fascinating because they're non-deep state. That the potential here is pretty incredible. You know, if they sit down and talk. Now, they're not going to agree on a lot. You know, one's a Democrat, one's a Republican. There's going to be a lot of policy differences. But in terms of integrity, and Christina says something really interesting about not just Health and Human Services, but the CIA. If Robert Kennedy was in charge of the CIA, that would be fascinating. And then he could really find out what happened to his father and his uncle.
Uh-huh.
If they told him. You know, so, I mean, these are the two interesting candidates to me. Robert Kennedy and Donald Trump, you know, and I would love to see Kennedy in Trump's administration. In fact, Christina Bob was even saying that that would be an interesting thing too, at CIA or at Health and Human Services, and then he can run in 2028. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, so are you saying that they would have a competing discussion?
Well, they're competing anyway because Kennedy's running.
At the same time as the debate.
Right. It would be a competing debate, basically, yeah.
So people would watch RFK instead of did you call them goobers?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a forgotten word. I have a list on my Facebook page from time to time of forgotten words.
I think I'm going to use it more often. I kind of like it. The deep state goobers.
Well, I'm kind of – you kind of sold me. What are they calling the seven dwarfs? Or I think there was another.
That's been used before.
Name.
I don't know if it's seven. I like deep state goober. I'm going to keep using that. Yeah, because they're all donor class. They're all told what to say. They're all. I mean, DeSantis has basically screwed himself completely for 2028 as well as 2024. So he's an idiot. I can't believe he actually fell for the ego strokes that got him in there and the money that was waved in front of his face. Idiot. So he's a goober. But yeah. I think it would be fascinating. I think Bianchi's left us too, so it's just you and me for the next few minutes, and I might just end a few minutes early and play some stuff I'm supposed to play. We haven't had a single break yet. We've been going straight through. It's been a great day. This is one of my favorite shows of all time. I'm really enjoying this one. But yeah, the non-deep state candidates, you know, sort of boycott. I think they'd have a fascinating discussion, and they would disagree on some things. particularly economic policy. I'd say government, various government programs they disagree on, because Kennedy's still a Democrat. He believes in government solutions, whereas Trump would believe in private solutions. So they're going to have a difference. But they're both men of integrity. They're both men of conviction. They're both honest. You know exactly where they stand. They're not hiding things. They're not lying. And they both represent a very particular political point of view. I think it'd be a fascinating discussion. And not to have them, you know, campaign together, because they won't. But I do see Kennedy in the Trump administration and then Kennedy running in 2028. And I think a lot of Republicans have a lot more respect for Robert Kennedy than they do any of the deep state goobers.
Right.
I just like saying it now.
Uh-huh.
What do you think?
Well, but I think, I mean, first of all, I don't go with the idea that Trump should skip the debate. I think if he goes to debate, he will wipe the floor with everybody else.
Okay.
And so, you know, that's my thinking, but for example, we've always said, or at least many of us have always said, that if John F. Kennedy were running today, the Democrats would not allow him in their party.
Right.
Because the Democrats have changed. Well, mm-hmm. we're seeing that played out in real time, which is quite interesting.
Okay.
Is that the Democratic Party has gone so far left, crazy, woke, insane, communist, that John F. Kennedy is in effect not welcome, not just because I say it, because we're watching it happen. John F. Kennedy is not welcome in the Democratic Party today.
Well, how about you know about Robert Kennedy Sr.? Robert R.F. Jr.'s, K. Jr.'s dad. I'm not as familiar with Robert as I am with John Kennedy, but he was very well loved and respected.
But I mean, that now, he was the Attorney General, right? He was the brother of John F. Kennedy. So,
yep.
I mean, he was part of John F. Kennedy's administration.
Mm-hmm.
And if you believe the Hollywood movie, you know, he played a major role in defusing the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah.
You know, so
he also
was
archenemies of J. Edgar Hoover. And that's
right,
his credit too. Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't suggest a lot of daylight between John F. Kennedy and his brother Robert as Attorney General. I mean, you know, no, they're not the same person, but I don't think they were. I think they were cut from the same cloth, as far as I can
tell.
Oh, yeah,
the same family. Yeah. No, I'd just be curious. Let me ask Marco, who's still listening in the Netherlands, because John Kennedy went to Berlin. Ich bin ein Berliner, which with a Boston mm-hmm. accent translates to I'm a jelly donut, because he didn't pronounce the R properly. Marco, how was John Kennedy thought of in Europe? Do you have any recollection? I think he probably missed that because we were all too young for that. But, you know, I mean, Kennedy, I think, has pretty good reputation in Europe, you know, as keeping Western Europe free, you know, from the communists. He hated the communists.
Mm-hmm.
Marco says, good thing he wasn't in Hamburg. Ich bin ein Hamburger. I want the Hamburger.
Wait, did he tell you that just now?
Yeah, no, Marco texted. See, we got live chat. See, if you go to the broadcast page, this is what I do when I'm on the studio screen, right? So I'm monitoring all the phone calls coming in. I've got my buttons, my sound effects, and Marco is on pretty much every day, unless he has something else he either has to or wants to do. But he's in the Netherlands, right? So he's always typing messages to me and making faces and stuff.
Good
thing he wasn't in Hamburg, you know.
That's,
how about Frankfurt?
He's
been on Frankfurter.
Well, and I don't want to dominate too much the conversation.
You're the only one left. It's just you and me. Don't worry about it. Dominate. Feel free. Yeah, go ahead.
So when I went to the Soviet Union, and then when it collapsed, you know, Latvia as a Christian missionary short term, and then also teaching business over there. And I got to know local people, and they didn't know how to. So this one woman who was trying to find investments in the West showed me this modest building in downtown Riga where John F. Kennedy stayed for the summer.
Okay.
After college, those who could do it were wealthy. There was sort of a tradition to go on to Europe.
I did that, but I wasn't wealthy. I did it for 3 months, but I wasn't wealthy. I'll tell you how I lived. you know, and scraps and bread and, you know, wine and farmers markets and things like that. But I did okay. It was fun. I lost about 25
pounds.
Right,
but it was sort of a tradition that you graduate from college, uh-huh. then you go off and you know, blow off steam for the summer in Europe,
yep.
and then you get a real job.
Bingo. Yep.
And so that John F. Kennedy did that. And the rumor is that he had a girlfriend. Girlfriend doesn't quite say it.
Should we say foreign affairs?
He had foreign affairs. Yeah,
he was engaging in foreign affairs. Okay, yeah, okay.
And that was the house where, you know, where he stayed, and he ran an apartment. And then that was 1939. Only months later, he watched the Nazis run over the place.
Wow.
And the communists go back and forth. So the theory being that for him, mm-hmm. this touched him very personally.
Yeah.
He knew that, you know, when he saw what the Nazis and the communists, you know, fighting, because originally, of course, Stalin went into Poland from the east. They divided up mm-hmm. Poland. And
yeah, people forget that. If you'll forget World War II, Stalin was, you know, Hitler from the west, Stalin from the east, and they did. They partitioned Poland because it was flat. It's easy to send the tanks in. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. So I can only imagine that John F. Kennedy, when he saw that happening, he knew
right.
people.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't just seeing someplace on a map. He was seeing people he
Those
knew.
Those friends. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's a big difference. This is where Brandon doesn't have any experience, you know, and Kennedy was in the war, and we know about his PT boat being slashed in half by a Japanese destroyer and all these things. So he's had real challenges. I'll tell you an interesting story is his older brother, Joe Kennedy, who was the one everybody thought would be president. He was a pilot, and he was a test pilot, and he was the one flying one of the first B-17 drones that was full of explosives and was supposed to be radio controlled, but they had him in. And he was supposed to bail out, but unfortunately it blew up with him in it still. And so that's how we lost Joe Kennedy, John Kennedy's older brother. So I guess it's four of them, John,
wow.
Robert, and Ted. So the four brothers. But that's how Joe Kennedy died in World War II. So John Kennedy became, you know, like the next in line, you know, to be president. And I thought he was fabulous because I mean, obviously everybody does some things you disagree with. But in terms of vision, you know, if for nothing else but the moon, going to the moon, you know, and then you look at presidents with no vision or limited vision. Obama just wanted to make us a communist state, you know, fundamentally transform America into something that he wants that we don't. How selfish can you get? Clinton, I mean, I think you saw the White House as his playroom. You know, these people that get power. Bush just wanted to be a good globalist and show daddy. You know, Bush the younger wanted to show daddy he could make a bigger war in Iraq than daddy did. And daddy wanted to show how tough he was. It is, being a CIA guy. Yeah. So you had Bush the elder making a war to show how tough he was. And you had Bush the younger wanting to make a bigger war so he could show how tough he was to daddy. I mean, that's really what it was all about.
Well, and remember that the whole thing about George H.W. Bush when he was president, there was this whole thing about him being a wimp, the wimp factor.
Right.
So he went in to invade Panama.
Oh,
you know,
Noriega.
You know, just to arrest Noriega.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, you know, that's just disgusting. That just to show he's not a wimp, he goes up and, you know, crushes some little
that's presidents do that all the time. Clinton sent the missiles into Bosnia the day after Lewinsky was discovered. I mean, that's what that was
right.
all about. That's what took her off the headlines. So presidents often use attacks against, you know, non-threatening, you know, targets all the time. I mean, that's like a standard ploy, but they usually don't start a war over it. You know, Iraq,
right.
You know, the effects of what have we accomplished since Iraq? Well, you know, I mean, I love our service folks. I mean, I honor them. I respect them. I thank them. I just don't like them being sent to places where they have no business being. And that would be Iraq,
right.
Afghanistan, and Ukraine.
Right. Well, that's what my, you know, my brother keeps saying too. It's like, you know, these things are all great until, you know, my tax dollars are being used to drone, you know, little children to death in Africa. And again, for, you know, the country is not that bad. Some of our politicians are, as you just said. But you know, Panama, let me say, Panama is not a small country, but it's a poor, weak country. So, you know, George H.W. Bush invading Panama is, you know, it's like a street gangster, you know, taking on an old elderly woman in a, you know, walker.
Yeah.
Just show how tough he is.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's like a militia group or like the FBI taking on a, you know, militia group of 10 people, you know, in a log cabin. I mean, give me a break. They've got tanks and, you know, or Waco, for example. Yeah. We're out of showtime. But this has been fascinating. And well, let's see what happens. Well, I'm going to talk to you, both of you, off the air about getting an email to Christina in case she wants to follow up with you. I think there's a real possibility there, and I think there's a real possibility that my goal, as always, is to connect with the Trump campaign and have all of us go to Mar-a-Lago. You, me, Catherine, Josie, Brianna, you know, Pianchi, all the folks, Wendy, and we need to be there to get our citizen legislation before Donald Trump.
And you also, yes. And also you need to get Matt Gaetz on.
I was calling
you last night. He's got a massive idea.
What's that?
Well, if we don't have time, I mean, he says that if Congress called Trump in as a witness, that they could give him immunity and it would end, these indictments, at least the one in D.C., which is the one that's a problem because it's D.C.
That's a great – I had not heard that. Okay. Well, you know, I've called it – just so everybody know, I have called his office, his district office, you know, every day of the recess. Bye, Marco. Take care. Have a good day in the Netherlands. I've called his office every day. They're not getting back to me. You know, I talked to Matt Gaetz personally at a rally, about 6 weeks ago, maybe 2 months ago now. I'm not sure when it was. But I met him. I said, hey, we need you back on the show. I've got ideas for you. Let's talk. He's like, okay. But it never happened. So he's got minions, and I can't get past the minions. But I've tried, you know, and this is a fabulous idea. It kind of it's sort of like our idea of political asylum that I was talking to Christina about. Yeah, I was half joking, but they might be able to use this as a rhetorical point in a rally or something. That the idea that the president of the United States has to get political asylum from an illegal U.S. government. I mean, I thought that was a fascinating concept. Jonathan?
Yeah. So I think Matt Gaetz needs to refine. He told it to Charlie Kirk yesterday.
Okay.
Trennis Evans asked the question, dude, why are you talking about it instead of just doing it? But the thing is that he does need to refine it a little bit better in order to make it work, because the idea that D.C. is supposed to be a neutral territory. The Constitution carved out 64 square miles precisely so that it would not be influenced by any state. It would be, you know, purely national. But what they've done is they've turned it into a den of thieves, which threatens the entire country. And so they've the District of Columbia has turned, not the people obviously or the thing, but the federal, the federal courts in D.C. have turned the entire Constitution on its head and threatened to unravel the entire Constitution. I think that in that grounds, Congress needs to, needs to investigate, because they have a situation where the federal election is about to be upended by a district that is supposed to be neutral.
Mm-hmm.
It was designed by our Constitution to be neutral, and it's the exact opposite.
Well, did you ever read my article, The Nation of Government, where I write about Washington, D.C. as its own country, and we are basically colonies? The 50 colonies of the country, of the nation of government. And that's really what it's come to, because it really, really describes exactly what you're talking about in just a little bit more detail.
Matt Gaetz can't, I mean, they can't call him in and immunize him without any reason for it, just as a naked, you know, power play.
Well, they need to do what I've been suggesting all along, which is they need to have the Select Committee on the stolen 2020 election. That would do it.
Uh-huh.
You know, they had a great committee here. I don't know if you heard the one on the unconstitutional they said that the Constitution is always in force, even in a pandemic. This Ohio congressman, Wenstrup, I've got the hearing I posted on my Facebook page. I've still got a record of it. It was a fabulous hearing. And, of course, you skip over the Democrats. I've learned to listen to hearings after they're over and just skip over the Democrats because there's a total waste of time, and they're very frustrating. But he talked about – he made a great opening statement, and he made a great – I might even cover that tomorrow. I might even read it. And the closing statement said, look, you know, the Constitution is always enforced. As Bianchi says, there's no on and off switch. They can't just come in and make a bunch of mandates, you know, take away your rights, you know, and you can't quarantine healthy people. And everything they did was quarantining healthy people. And saying asymptomatic transfer, you know, or you got to keep other people safe, you know, is nonsense. No, you don't. You really don't. You have to keep yourself safe. But I'm not responsible for giving up my rights to keep other people safe. And who's to say giving my rights is going to keep anybody safe? So it's a bogus argument. But let me see what happened with Matt Gaetz. Let me call him again on that, see if I can get him on the show to explain further. And then you could come on the show and talk to him about it from a legal point of view. Yeah, I know you would. Of course, yeah.
He says that it takes a chairman like Andy Biggs.
Uh-huh.
What he needs to have it happen is a chairman of a subcommittee or committee would have to call Trump in, and then Trump would say, "Well, I can't talk about it because I'm facing prosecution," and then the committee says, "Okay, we'll grant you immunity."
Yeah.
Go.
Yeah. Exactly. No, that'd be fabulous. Jordan could do it. Who's running oversight? Jim Comer? James Comer could do it in oversight.
Right.
Jim Jordan could do it. He's head of judiciary. It's probably the best place is judiciary. Now, the Democrats would scream and yell and piss and moan, but they couldn't stop a hearing on the stolen 2020 election. Yeah, and we still got Lindell's plan. I was going to ask Christina about Lindell's plan too, but again, I only got to about half of what I got accomplished what I wanted to, but I still had another, you know, 20-30 minutes of material, you know, should the opportunity have presented itself. Well, I'm hoping she'll want to contact you. I'm gonna send her an email.
All right.
We'll get the email you want off the air and Christina and Catherine's email too.
Well, for Matt Gaetz, I mean, the politically careful way to do it in terms of public, you say, you know, okay, you want to prosecute Trump for this? Fine, but you can't do it in the District of Columbia.
Yeah, that'd be fine. At least he'd be
state. Yeah, I mean, obviously yeah. That's not the entire loaf.
Right.
But I think it drives the point home. It's like, look, we can't have a federal district
mm-hmm.
that is corrupting the entire country.
Right.
So
if
you have something that you can bring and you can bring it, you know, in Oklahoma, go for
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm. Well, you'd also need a jury of his peers, and that would be conservative businessmen. You know, finding a jury of his peers, you know, you could knock out any government employee, although he was one briefly. But
Trennis Evans points out that. I think it was Trennis, maybe it was you, but somebody was saying that they, since D.C. is not a state.
That was me.
The jury cannot be a jury of his peers.
No, I said that you can't hold it there because D.C. is not a state, that he is a state citizen of the state of Florida. And Florida should be exercising some extradition over this or at least, you know, something.
It's complicated because if you go to Idaho and murder somebody,
mm-hmm.
Idaho can prosecute you. But the thing is that D.C. is not a state, so it can't be a jury of his peers because it's not a state.
Yeah, it's not part of the – technically, it's not part of the United States, which is interesting because it's not a state. It's a district. It's an independent, separate district designed to be that way so that no state has the capital of the United States in their state, which makes perfect sense. It's actually a brilliant idea.
However, where it got screwed up is that all these people went to live there.
Yeah.
That was not the idea. It was not supposed to be a residential district.
Yeah.
You know,
well, if you made a law that nobody could live there, no one could live in D.C., that'd be very interesting, but I don't know if you could do that. But the biggest thing is just to, you know, cut down the size of government.
Well, the way they could do that
uh-huh.
is to give all the residential parts to Maryland.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be as big as it is. So you limit it just to the district would be just the federal government buildings, which is mostly what, Pennsylvania Avenue? Pentagon to Arlington National Cemetery is actually in Virginia. That's not even in D.C. So you've got
it was part of the district. Yes, that corner of the diamond went back to Virginia because of the Civil War.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. Huh. Okay. So if you take Jefferson Lincoln Memorial down the mall, you got the Pentagon off to your right. You've got the Capitol building at the end. You've got the White House, the Smithsonian up and down the mall. Do you really need the district to be any bigger than those areas? Maybe from like Lafayette Park, you know, any of the historic government buildings, because most of them are on Pennsylvania Avenue, like the FBI is there, some of the other Department of this, that, and everything. So, you know, they're fairly close together, aren't they? So we don't really need that big a district.
Right. It's called the federal city.
Okay.
I think originally in our founding, uh-huh. you know, there are references. I think there are somewhat indistinct. You know, it's not like, I mean, they're more of tangential side references. Not like a definitional reference, but they talk about the federal city.
Okay, so if you give the northern, we could write a bill on this. It'd actually be an interesting idea. So if you give the northern parts back to Maryland, the residential parts, is there a southern part of D.C. that should go to Virginia? Or is it mostly
northern?
No, because
it already did. It already did.
Oh, interesting.
I mean,
so
there are southeast D.C.
Mm-hmm.
is not only residential, but very poor. You know, Anacostia.
Right.
It's miserably poor.
Yeah, but that's not part of D.C., though, is it, or is it?
Yes, it is at present.
Okay. Yeah. We give that back to Virginia. I mean, Alexandria is
Maryland side. That's on the Maryland side.
Anacostia is?
Yes.
Oh, I guess I have to look at a map again. Maryland must wrap around D.C. more than I'm imagining it does.
It does. It does.
Okay. All right. Let's do a bill on that. It'd be fascinating. Well, let's draw some new lines here.
All right.
D.C. Divestment Act. Yeah,
all right. I better go.
Thank you. Appreciate your help today. Thanks for calling in.
Sure. Thanks.
All right. Let's go the D.C. to Maryland Act. I'm going to write this down here. Maybe I'll draft it. I'm going to look at a map. This sounds like fascinating. We'll change D.C. and just, so in other words, remove the residential areas. Remove the residential areas. Yeah, make them part of Maryland. That'll stop D.C. from being this claim that it'll be a state, but it can't be a state. The Constitution says it can't be a state. It has to stay a district. Residential areas. What a great day today. Great to have Christina Bob on. I'm going to follow up with her. Let's see what happens. Hopefully we're one step closer to connecting with the Trump campaign, and we'll go from there. Thank you all for listening today. This has been a very special show. I really appreciate having everybody listen. Please share the show. Please share our bills that we talked about. Go to writeyourlaws.com. I'll give you the information here in a second as to where to find everything. But this is one of those, you know, kind of magic shows, from starting off with Bill to Wendy to Bonnie, to Christina, to everybody who joined in, Jonathan, Catherine, Pianchi. I'm really happy, today. So I think we've accomplished something. Let's see where we are tomorrow when we do it all again at 7 a.m. Central Time here on Action Radio, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Here is your Action Radio contact and website information. The call-in line is 215-383-3832. Our show site is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Same link, live and a podcast. Please share all our shows. We have live chat at the bottom of the broadcast page available worldwide. Sign in to your free account and type away. We have an internet Skype line where you can call the show worldwide also. Please see the broadcast page for our Skype name. Call in during the show to get approved. Our bill writing site is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, writeyourlaws.com. This is where anyone can write a bill and start the process of it becoming law. My paid and free subscription column is at gregpenglis.substack.com. Please consider a paid subscription of $5 per month or greater. For contributions to Action Radio, please go to givesendgo.com/actionradio. We have over 20 Action Radio Facebook groups. Use the Facebook search window by putting in Action Radio to find our groups. My public email is greg@writeyourlaws.com. Please contact me about advertising on Action Radio and helping our mission of freedom. Thank you for listening. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Well, that sounds good. Even better. Okay, how about your car? If you want the best service for your vehicle, please talk to James at Florida Stores Automotive, conveniently located at 6715 Caroline Street in the historic district of Milton, Florida, right between the Milton Bakery and the Blackwater Trail. Whether you need an oil change or an entire engine replaced, this is the place. The phone number is 850-623-6651. That's 850-623-6651. Call, ask questions, and get the information you need. Florida Stores Automotive is a full-service automotive shop for both domestic and imports, modern and classic. It is a family-owned business here in our Milton community. Open weekdays from 7:30 to 5 p.m., Florida Stores Automotive is a convenient place to keep your car maintained and on the road. Ask them about Firestone tires and the rotation and maintenance plan. Florida Stores Automotive. I go there. You should too. Do you know your way around healthcare, insurance, pharmacies, surgery, alternative treatments and choices? I don't. Which is why I'm so glad I met Priscilla Romans, had her on Action Radio, and learned about health patient advocacy. She is the founder of Grace Care. And now as an affiliate of Grace Care, we are proud to offer through our discount code, WYL, which stands for Write Your Laws, a 10% discount. Grace Care saves you both time and money. They provide medical advocacy, consultation, advice, and recommendations nationwide. Their website is gracecare.com. That's GRAITH care.com. You can email them at gracecare.adm@gmail.com or call them at 469-864-7149. That's 469-864-7149. Grace Care, better health through better knowledge and advocacy. This is Greg Penglis for Strikeforce, your source for pure energy. Strikeforce is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. You make your energy drink yourself. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strikeforce, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at StrikeforceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engine. Action Radio. Part of the ADHD Radio Network. The ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. Thank you.